Members, I think we should start. Unfortunately, there are no bells here. If there were bells, I was just going to ring the bell. Let's just welcome members. There's one person who I'm not sure whether he's a member or he's not a member. You know, there's a bed. You don't know whether a bed is a mouse or it's a bed. So now, I'm not sure, Minister, whether you are a member on our side or you are on their side. It's the opposition side. And so I'm not sure whether you're on the opposition side or on our side. But welcome, members. There's only one thing on our agenda. That's why we have not even given you a document that tells you the agenda. We're just going to be discussing the strategic plan of the Department of Health, and we're going to be discussing who vote 15 budget. Can we have one meeting, member? So we're just going to be discussing the strategic plan of the department and the vote 15, as a budget of vote 15. But before we go on to that, I just want to mention a few things. We're not going to discuss the members, but some of it is just information. There is going to be FIFA World Cup that is coming. And there are two things that I want to mention around the FIFA 2010 FIFA World Cup. One is that there's an oversight group that has been elected, first members from our committee, who are going to be leaving on the 5th. On the 5th, they're supposed to be in Joburg, and they're coming back on the 9th, 10th. And they're going to be visiting the state, the areas where there's going to be soccer World Cup. The details, I think those members have attended the meeting that was there yesterday, so they know themselves, and they were in that meeting, so they know. But I wanted to mention that. The second thing about the FIFA World Cup is that there's a new law that has been put up by Sports, Arts and Culture. You remember the bill that was passed in Parliament. It has got regulations that pertain to health. And we've been given those regulations. I sat down with the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee for Sport, and we looked at those regulations that pertain to health. I don't think there's anything that needs us to discuss it, but what I've requested Uvyoga to do is to make photocopies and give them to you, and you can have a look at them. I'll have a discussion again with the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee for Health so that those can be adopted. But if you want us to have a meeting, we can have, but I don't think we need to have a meeting. I've looked at them. They are straightforward, but those regulations are going to be given to you. One other thing is that on next week, we're supposed to come back and adopt the report that we're going to be presenting on the 13th. So we need to decide which day should we meet next week, either Wednesday next week or Thursday. But we can discuss that later, not now. We can discuss which date are we going to come back to adopt the report. It's just going to be coming back just to adopt the report. The other part, the SADC parliamentarian wanted to have a workshop of HIV and AIDS. We don't need to discuss it, but we're just going to give you a draft plan of that workshop. That is going to be done by Parliament on behalf of the SADC parliamentarian. So that is going to be given to you. The last one is that we were visited by the ex-president of who are the champions for the HIV-free generation, and they visited us between the 4th and the 5th of March. I'm just going to read a letter that they've written to us. This letter is written to the chairperson of Portfolio Committee for Health. It's written by the chairman of the champions, who happens to be His Excellency Festus D. Mukhaye. The letter reads as follows. We, the champions for HIV-free generations, wish to express our sincere gratitude to you for hosting us at the Portfolio Committee on Health meeting, March 4th, 2010. We left feeling that our meeting with you and the other honorable members of the Parliament was a success. Thank you. Thanks to your gracious leadership. As you are aware, we came to South Africa as part of the regional mission to exchange ideas with government and civil society leaders on ways to arrest the spread of HIV and AIDS in the sub-Saharan Africa. We came to reach out to our peers and to find solutions together. We are happy to report that we were able to accomplish these goals. In addition to our meeting with you, the champions met with the Deputy President, Honorable Halima Motlanthe, then Acting President of the Republic of South Africa, attended the first South African National AIDS Council plenary meeting on the of the 2010, made field visits to KwaZulu Clinic in Pietermaritzburg and Ubuntu Clinic in the Khayelitsha Township, and met with KwaZulu-Natal Premier Dr. Zweli Mkhize and His Majesty King Goodwill Zwelithini of the Zulu Nation. As discussed in our meeting with the Portfolio Committee on Health, the champions would like to congratulate South Africa for its exceptional leadership and commitment to health of its citizens. We believe that now is the time to consider appropriate strategies in order to maintain and sustain these commitments. The champions believe that prevention of HIV must be the priority number one, a strategy that focuses on comprehensive prevention targets and the underlying causes of the epidemic has the greatest potential to reduce the scope of the problem. We believe the policy on the medical male circumcision and infant circumcision should be endorsed by leadership and rolled out with urgency. We encourage South Africa to assume a stronger leadership role in the regional response to HIV and AIDS. South Africa could play a leading role in the subject to coordinate regional prevention programs and harmonize treatment systems targeting mobile and migrant population in particular. South Africa could also leverage its influence at the group at the G20 to ensure that member commitments on HIV and AIDS are followed through, that the global responses reflect the evidence and burden of the epidemic in Africa. Finally, the champions would like to endorse the upcoming national HIV testing campaign, and we encourage the integration of couples testing into that campaign. All leaders should take every opportunity to encourage HIV testing. We look forward to continuing correspondence with you and your government as we move further into 2010 and face the regional epidemic together. Furthermore, the champions wish to avail themselves to you as an informal network of support on these and other issues. On behalf of all the champions for HIV free generation, Rialeboha. Yours sincerely, the former president. Those were just the issues that I thought we needed to tell you about. I don't think we need to discuss them. So fortunately the department is here, led by the minister. Thank you very much, Minister, for coming in. Now, probably we just need to tell you who are we this side so that you can know the people that are going to be asking you questions. Rather than introducing them, let me allow them to introduce themselves. Myself, I'm Steven Kokwana, who is the chairperson of this portfolio committee. We'll start from that end. Margaret, we'll start with you and move this way.
Independent. From the ANC Northwest. Albertina Lichudi, ANC, from KwaZulu-Natal.
Good day, ladies and gentlemen. Brahim Suleiman from the beautiful province of Northern Cape, ANC.
I'm Babi Khanal from Kong.
Thanks, Belekhana. Yeah, the last time. Okay, thank you very much. This side we've got the minister. Maybe minister, it's up to you if you want to introduce your team. But it's, we're giving over to you. He doesn't have to introduce himself. That's why.
Maybe this one I must introduce because it's new. Dr. Jochen Pile, he has always been a DPT, but from the 15th, he's the acting HOD of the department. Because the acting HOD is Dr. Kenny Chase, who I understand to be very few some weeks back, has left to become the HOD of the Akumarawe. So Dr. Jochen Pile is taking over.
Entire
myself,
DDG, National Health Department.
Good afternoon, I'm Kulani Masilela, the Chief Director for Strategic Planning, National Health.
Good afternoon, my name is James Cornwall. I'm the Chief Director for Sector Labour Relations and Planning, and I'm acting as the DG for Dr. Maslati.
Good afternoon, I'm Dr. Consilian Smoluko, Social Advisor to the Minister of Health. Thank you.
My name is Dr. Carol Marshall. I'm the acting DDG for Health Planning and Monitoring.
Thank you very much. I was trying to count, Minister, whether you've got 50%. 50-50. It doesn't seem as if you've got 50-50. But it's always 100%. But let's congratulate you, Jochen Pile, for acting. We don't know how long are you going to be acting, but for now. You know that you'll be taken over. Whatever problems that were there, we're not going to go and look for somebody else. You'll have to answer. I don't know who are these people sitting behind me. Oh, no, they don't even introduce themselves. I think let's leave them.
Who are they?
If they can just tell us who are they. I know her. I don't even see her. Yeah, let her introduce herself. Thank you very much.
Good afternoon, members. My name is Mandy Fly. I love that from medicine. Good afternoon. My name is Mandisa, Register of Medicine.
Is she the only one, Minister, that you want to introduce herself? Oh, okay. Okay, let's give over to you to make the presentation.
Thank you, Chairperson and members of the committee. May I start a little bit rough by saying, unfortunately, I'm sure Chairperson, you might be aware, I'm crossing the country in preparation for the massive HIV campaign, for which I believe I still get the chance before the 15th of April to address members of this committee, because it's a very important thing. So I'm not sure if it pleases the committee to be released at 4:30, at least. Yes. Because I am meeting private practitioners around the weekend in relation to this. The second thing I want to do before starting, I I just want to make some few corrections, which unfortunately a person when you edit documents time and again you keep on making things. On page 8 of the document, of the presentation, slide number 6, I want to correct this thing because there's also a question. I suppose it's from DA about what you are doing, and I've already responded to it. And it looks like in the strategic plan, page 81 of the strategic plan, they put it a little bit different. What are we doing with the DBSA? It looks like there's a misunderstanding that we are going around doing an audit of qualifications and skills of CEOs. We have got that knowledge. Every CEO is employed, we know what they've passed, we know their qualifications, they're identified. What we are rather doing was to check the functionality, efficiency, and appropriateness of the organizational structure in that hospital. That means what they are doing, is it functional? What is the problem? Is it the CEO or anybody else? Is it efficient? Is the structure that they are using appropriate for that particular hospital? And lastly, the issue of delegation. Do they have enough delegations to exercise their duty? I just wanted to correct that so that there's no misunderstanding. The other area which I want to correct, on slide number 29, compared with page 59 of the strategic plan, this issue of quality establishing quality management and accreditation body, I mentioned it in the debate with the State of the Nation address. I just want to emphasize that quality management accreditation body, which is independent, is still accountable to the minister, because that's a normal practice in many countries. That's what's leaking in the strategic plan. Not as if we are providing some private sector organization which is still not going to account to the department. Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, in terms of the presentation, Chairperson, I'm sure this is the structure of what we're going to present, this mission and vision context of the health sector. The health sector response, implementing the health sector responses, major health campaigns, and then resources and finally MTF allocation. And then from there we'll do the overall budget until the conclusion. I think this is just showing what is inside. I don't need to repeat the vision and mission of the department, I'm sure it doesn't really change. But the context under which we are making this presentation, the context of service delivery, we believe there are several key issues facing the health sector which must be known. Namely, number one, we are aware that health is one of the 5 key priorities of government, which the President has mentioned many times, alongside education, rural development, fighting corruption, and crime and rural development. So the second thing which we think the committee must know is that South Africa has got the quadruple burden of disease. We are going through 4 major disease burdens, which we think the country is fighting difficulty. This was also revealed by the Lancet report, which was released in August last year, that we are going through a massive HIV and AIDS and TB epidemic. We are also going through a very high rate of maternal and child mortality. But we are going through a problem of non-communicable disease, which are on the rise. High blood pressure, cardiac disease, diabetes, mellitus. And lastly, the issues of violence and injury are also contributing immensely to health burden. So we've got this quadruple burden of disease, which we are faced with, which we think we need to look into. The Lancet further said, while we are only 0.7% of the world population, but we are giving 17% of each global burden of HIV. And that's also something to reckon with. Despite spending 8.7% of the gross domestic product and spending more than on health than any other African country. South Africa is only one of the 12 countries in which mortality rate for children younger than 5 years has increased since 1990. It's also in the Hansard report. The other issue is life expectancy in South Africa. It has actually declined from the period 1985 to 1994. Let South Africa estimate life expectancy at birth to have been about 54.12 years for males and 64 for females. But from 1996, it declined to 52 years for males and 61 for females. Generally, life expectancy in our country is sort of declined, and we are very much worried about that. And this is the life expectancy now as estimated by Statistics South Africa. We are also presenting this with a view on Millennium Development Goals. So remember, the United Nations Millennium Development Goals, there are 18 ones, and 3 of them are health related. And unfortunately, the fall within this area is very difficult for us. The other important factor is that we think and we hold this view very strongly that the country has got a predominantly curative healthcare, which places less emphasis on disease prevention and health promotion. And that's why we need to turn the health situation around. We can no longer have a curative health system. No matter how much money you've got, you'll never be able to go. So there is an urgent need to enhance the health system effectiveness at all levels. Now, this is what we are going to be trying to do. In terms of our plan, we are saying again, as putting the thing to what I've been saying, that we have got this baseline of life expectancy we need to improve. This baseline of maternal mortality, this baseline of maternal mortality, this prevalence of HIV/AIDS, and the issue of maternal transmission, and the percentage of HIV/AIDS women who are on ART, and our TB cure rate, percentage of HIV-infected people who are on ART, all these are figures that we need to change. These are the baseline figures that we are having. Now, we are also having instruments with which to fight that battle I've shown you. It's our 10-point program, I'm sure you know it very well. That number one thing, we must provide strategic leadership and create the social combat of better health outcomes. We must implement the national health insurance. We must improve the quality of services. We must overhaul the healthcare system. There are two things we want to do on overhauling the healthcare system. It's refocusing the healthcare system on primary healthcare, meaning prevention and promotion, but also secondly, improving the functionality and management of the healthcare system in terms of, you know, what the CTA is doing, taking the functionality, appropriateness of structures in hospitals, the efficiency, etc. Number five is improving the human resource, both the planning, development, and management. Over the past few months, I've responded to many questions from members of parliament on this issue of human resource. They just come in different ways, but it's the same thing. And I've consistently said the issue of human resources, health human resources, particularly doctors and nurses, is a serious problem for the whole continent of Africa. So we need to look into it. And then number six is talking about the revitalization of the health infrastructure. We are dividing it into three. That we need to accelerate the delivery of health infrastructure through public-private partnerships. This was already mentioned by the Minister of Finance. About 5 major teaching hospitals to go through PPP. But we also believe revitalizing primary level infrastructure is very important if you want to turn the healthcare system towards prevention and promotion. But lastly, we believe we are in a position to accelerate the delivery of health technology and information communication technology, which is still, we are still having problems with that, but we believe these three things under infrastructure need to be improved. And we need to accelerate the implementation of HIV and AIDS and sexually transmitted disease. That's why we are coming with a plan, national strategic plan, which is the one which is making me run around the country. But we also need mass mobilization for better health outcomes for the population. and the HIV AIDS treatment, I mean, counseling and testing is one of the mass mobilizations that's going to happen in the country more than anything that we have ever seen. In fact, I'm going to find out Deputy President Mark Haywood is going to be the biggest in the world. I'm not sure of that. We also agreed that we'll reduce the drug policy, increasing the logistics of supply, and last, strengthen research and development. These are our 10 points on the 10 point program, which you know very well. But you are aware that the cabinet then, even though we have got a 10 point program, decided on something that is called outcome based, especially for the five priorities of education, health, rural development, safety and security, and job, employment, job. Then they said health must come with some particular outcomes. If anything else is not done, but those activities must be done within the next 5 years. For health, we have chosen this area of mortality, both infant and maternal mortality, the control of HIV, the control of TB, and the health system effectiveness. We're choosing these four things. That if anything else is not done on our 10-point program, those must be done. But most of the things on the 10 points, we can actually divide them into these. Now, out of those, we choose 20 outcomes, which are areas on which we are going to be concentrating, to increase the life expectancy, to reduce the child mortality, to decrease maternal mortality ratio, managing the prevalence of HIV, reduce the rate of infection, expand on the prevention of mother-to-child transmission, improve TB case load, improve also TB outcomes, but also improve access to antiretrovirals, and decrease the prevalence of multi-drug resistant TB. Revitalizing of primary healthcare, as I mentioned, improve physical infrastructure for healthcare delivery, improve patient care infection, accredit health facilities for quality, enhance operational management, improve access to human resources for health, improve healthcare financing, strengthen health promote information system on this, improve health services for the youth, expand access to home-based care and community health workers. These are the 10 main outcomes which we picked up on the outcome basis, which must match with our 10-point program. And all our plans here will be about this. For instance, we think, as a health sector, what is our response to the things I've shown you? We require improvement in the health outcomes. And here we are putting the indicators that the life expectancy is here. In the next 5 years, is it possible to move it to there? We are aware that this is a very difficult concept. It takes a long time, but it's better to have targets. That is it possible that when the state of South Africa in 5 years time to life expectancy, we have increased in South Africa, we are worried, chairperson, that our life expectancy is suddenly reduced. The slides I was telling previously keep on eight statistics, even below countries like Senegal, Algeria, etc. We think we don't belong there. And the issue of infant mortality, we believe who can reduce it to that much will have done better. And maternal mortality, we know this is a mountain to reduce from 400 to 625 to 100. But basically, in a normal country, we should say we must reduce to zero. Because no woman wants to die giving birth. But unfortunately, the reality is that dying large number, and 43% of that death are contributed to by HIV. The HIV prevalence, which is at 27.1, we need to improve quality of life of people with HIV. You are aware that we can't say that the prevalence must reduce, because it might actually increase if our work strengthens. Because prevalence, people are positive at any one time. If the ARV treatment kicks out, this number might actually increase, meaning that we have got more people surviving. But we also need to reduce the transmission of mother to child. This one, chairperson, our UN agency said they are not happy about South Africa. Because, you know, the executive director of UN agency, the president of Global Fund, they said we keep on saying we'll accelerate mother to child transmission. They say, why can't you talk about eradication? Why should the child be born HIV positive? Can you try that all women undergo, I mean, massive prevention so that at least in line with the champions of H2 society, at least we start giving birth to children who are H3. But we should not put it at zero much as it's desirable. Because, for instance, Professor Kadeskin was telling us, in the last 5 years, there were only 4 cases of maternal child transmission in France. That is country of origin, even though he's the president of the Global Fund. But he said in France, they were able to do that with massive PMTCT. Now, in Africa, as a continent, the figure is 400,000. We're having 400,000 children born in Africa every year who got HIV from their mother. In South Africa, it's about 70,000. And we believe if France can move to 4 people, at least we could be between 0 and 5%. And internationally, they say at least that would be somehow acceptable. Even though if we can knock zero, we'll be very happy. But I know I've worked in rural areas before. There are women who enter the hospital the first time, just a few hours before delivery. If you have never met them before, there's no way you could have made this prevention. So we need to, the percentage of eligible HIV-positive women initiated on ARVs also need to increase. As you are aware that we have agreed that we don't wait for the sick account. The president announced that during World AIDS Day, and we believe on the 1st of April this will be initiated. The teachings you are raised, in the country, 64%. In KZN, it's actually as low as 60%, and Mpumalanga, because of their very high prevalence of HIV AIDS. We need to increase it to 85%. That means that's one of the millennium development goals, that our cure rate is supposed to be. It is very low because of the HIV problem, but we believe if we accelerate HIV treatment, we can reach that. Once we reach that, we believe we can be under control. And percentage of HIV co-infected patients who are on ARVs, at the moment it's 10%, we want them to be at 100%, because we want to cut this link between the two diseases. The issue of increasing life expectancy, apart from the things I've mentioned, when you increase life expectancy, what do we do? We deal with HIV/AIDS in that manner, as was said by the president. I just remember to remind you that there were 4 things you mentioned. Number one, that all pregnant women in the focus of 3 weeks start treatment. All children under 1 year don't wait for CD4 count if they are positive start treatment. All co-infected people CD4 count 3 weeks start treatment. All other women whose CD4 count is more than 3 weeks start prevention of mother-to-child transmission at 14 weeks. And we need to increase the number of patients initiated on ARVs every year to reach that 80%. I've already spoken about the TB cure rate that it needs to move from here to above 80. And then the incidence of malaria, we also need to move it to 0.71 per 1,000 in the population who are at risk to 0.56. At least on malaria, you are aware 10% is one disease for which South Africa has been largely successful. In terms of trying to control malaria. But it's a dream that we can actually eliminate it together with our surrounding countries, rather than just controlling it. The issue of reducing child mortality, we are very embarrassed. After all, Africa is one of only 10 countries around the world who in the past decades have not been able to reduce infant mortality. We need to do something to do that. And we are also going to increase the number of children on ARVs, as I said. We want to increase the number and proportion of HIV-positive children who are on vaccine course among the own population from 6 weeks of birth, so that we eliminate the chances of the other opportunity infection. Increasing the percentage of mothers and babies who receive postnatal care within 6 days from that percentage to that, conducting measles and polio campaigns in all provinces. By May 2010, we must have reached 90% or 95% of children. That means measles and polio vaccine. It's also going to be a massive campaign. Increasing the percentage of children under 1 year of age fully immunized from 8% to more than 95% by 2012-18. Increasing the percentage of children under 1 year of age immunized with 2 new vaccines, that is pneumococcal, which causes pneumonia and meningitis, and rotavirus, which causes diarrhea. We are aware that gastroenteritis is a problem for many children, especially those who are not on breastfeeding. They usually suffer diarrhea. And we need to immunize them against that from 40% to 80%. We also need to ensure that all school health services are provided at least in the 18 priority cities by next year, and in all schools by the end of the 2020 financial year. I'm trying to put up a plan with the Minister of Education. That sometime by June, we need to launch a school health program, because most of our schools no longer have health problems. Like being visited by an NSP in the United States school, you know, some kids don't even exercise chairperson. And most of them belong to us here in this room. Those who don't exercise. Those who exercise are those whose parents are poor because they walk to school. Ours here in this room, they are dropped at the gate of the school, no, at the classroom door with a car and collected there and put in front of TV. Not very healthy. So the incident of children who are getting type 2 diabetes is already increasing. Type 2 diabetes is supposed to be for adults. But it's increasing among our kids. No exercise, nothing. Sitting on tears, front of TV, not playing. It's a big problem for the country. Let's not undermine it. If we are to cut the other burden, the other people who are involved, of course, is you here. And I just want to remind you that we invited you to the SANAC launching of healthy lifestyles, and only the chairperson came. And I'm holding you against us because we believe we must keep the lead. The issue of exercise in the country is very, very important. And chairperson, just to emphasize that, on that day, the day after that, we had a workshop with professors from FI Tanzania. They are worried about this thing. Africa is going through an epidemiological transition from the type of life we used to know to the type of less activity, which is very dangerous. They gave us three measures in that workshop to measure our ways. Professors and ministers and all that, and nobody won. Nobody passed. We all failed, just to show how big the problem is. Because the body measurement that a normal human being must measure, be the woman, be the man. If I give you tape measures here, there's going to be trouble.
but you know, Minister, if they had come for the soccer that we played, you would have lost. If the members would have come, you would have lost.
But just to help you people go to school, kids, the recommendation here is very important. And members here must take it. They say if you just walk, take a walk, not even running. If you just do it 30 minutes a day for 5 days, that is enough to eliminate disease. Just walking. The deputy president is one attend walker who does it. Just to make sure that for 5 days a week, you walk at least 30 minutes. A very important thing. It will reduce our hospitals from all these burdens which we are faced with now. And we want our kids to start at school. That's why we are going to launch that campaign. Reducing the maternal mortality, I've already said many things. This is just in addition about antenatal care, primary health care. I think most of these I've mentioned under HIV/AIDS. The other is the issue of termination of pregnancy. Part of our high maternal mortality, we believe the issue of termination of pregnancy is a problem. We have been criticized by UNAIDS, not only South Africa, that in Africa, ever since we started the war against HIV/AIDS and spoke about condoms, we have thrown family planning out of the window. I'm sure many of you here, the last time we had the word contraception is a long time ago. Contraceptive pills, they hold them. We believe they no longer work, because everybody is using condom, which is not true. So what the young girls are doing, they are substituting this they are substituting termination of pregnancy for contraception. That's why, and then if you move around, there are many people who are advertising this. You just find the board there with an arrow. That's called this way. When you go there, you find a very illegal structure. And this is why, as we also want to be held, even by you, to eliminate this. We need to increase the percentage of maternity facilities which reveal maternal and perinatal death and address identified deficiencies from 53% to 100% by 2013 for a year. Managing HIV prevalence. We are moving from VCT to this. I'm going to be writing you letters as members of the parliament to give you details. The cabinet has already passed this, that from the 15th of April, we we are going to go on a massive HIV campaign. I read from some newspapers who were facing it, but treating it wrongly, that the aim of this is to offer people who come to hospitals for other things, conciliation. That's not what we're doing. We are offering every South African, including yourself, especially people between 12 years and 65. We are saying on the 15th, the president will launch his campaign officially and test, together with the deputy president. And of course, I'll follow them. And you will also follow us. And then on the 19th, all the province must launch. All the healthcare facilities need to do this testing. All the universities also. We will discuss with parents about schools because it's also important. But I'm giving details of this campaign tomorrow in a big press conference and I will get actual clear details. But we also write you a letter. This is going to be a massive, massive campaign that the country has ever seen in terms of trying to manage prevalence of HIV and AIDS. These ones I've already mentioned, I'm sure. But oh, the other important one, we need to increase percentage of people who are on IMA preventative therapy. In South Africa, our UN agencies complain that we know that people are HIV positive. I received that for TB. They can get TB anytime. Why don't we go to prevention therapy? Even if it's expensive, it won't be more expensive than waiting for a person to get TB. That's another new thing that we're going to focus on. Reducing the rate of infection, as we said. These are the details of this campaign. I don't have to mention them here. I said we're going to increase a massive distribution of condoms. At the moment, South Africa is distributing only 450 million male condoms. We want to distribute 1.5 billion male condoms when we do this testing campaign, and another billion waiting for 2010. But I will give you very clear details about what we are doing about it. We also need to implement information, education, and communication. Not independent electoral commission. Information, education, and communication. Targeting the risk group. And we implementing of the behavior change program with our external partners. This is very important also. We are busy integrating antenatal care with PMCPT. Because women in South Africa are giving a health service which they are not able to deal with. You're pregnant, you go to a clinic, they test you for syphilis, blood pressure, blood sugar, everything, you are a pregnant woman. Then they say, no, we don't provide PMTC services, go somewhere else. Mm. It's not working. Mm. They need to be integrated. Any woman who's pregnant, where they appear, whether it's a clinic or a hospital, they must get a whole broad range of things that a pregnant woman is entitled to, including PMTC. Otherwise, we won't cut this infection rate. And also, as I said, PMTCT prophylaxis for pregnant women at 14 weeks. This was mentioned in we are ready to start this on the 1st of April. Improving early diagnosis of HIV exposed infants by increasing the proportion of HIV exposed infants diagnosed during dry blood spot polymerase test reaction. And I think it's just a lot of medical jargon there, but what it means is, there are kids who are dumped in hospitals who are exposed, we don't know their status. Sometimes we delay in trying to test them and treat them immediately in terms of post-exposure prophylaxis. Improving TB notification cases. That means strengthening the DOT strategy in all districts, increasing the number of community health workers who are trained in DOT, increasing TB reported cases. At the moment, you are aware that 1% of South Africa has got TB. Out of every 100 South Africans, one has got TB. That's our TB cases. Once reduced to about 175 by 2018, if we work hard and smart enough. But we also want to integrate TB and HIV. Like pregnant women, this is a people problem. The co-infected people who are now at 73% are being told to come to a clinic, collect anti-TB treatment, get into a car, move to another to get HIV treatment. It's not working. They must get it under one roof. Simply it's not waiting for us. And we believe by March 2011 we will finish this integration. I must confess, we've been doing it with a lot of help from UNAIDS, from USAID, from United Nations, Group Nations Development. External international partners have been very helpful. These are the figures of people that we've been seeing, and these are the districts and sub-districts in which we need to ensure coordination of TV. I think this is just a continuing figure until we reach TB cure rate of more than 8% rather than 4. This is quite infected people are going to say that from the first of April they get their ARVs when they see people causing increases. We also need to fight the prevalence of drug resistant TB. We need to try our best that ensuring that by 2011, all 20 drug resistant TB facilities appropriately implement drug resistant TB guidelines. That means that no drug resistant TB actually can place patients on appropriate TB regime and initiate ARV on all eligible people present with HIV and AIDS and tuberculosis and the TB program of that from the 1st of April. In fact, as a senior of the primary health care, we believe South Africa has, we have removed our eyes off the ball in terms of primary health care, and we need to renew the strength of this. And strengthen primary health care teams in all the 9 provinces, complete audit of primary level services and infrastructure, improve governance of district health system and increase the number of district health councils and staffing, ensure all 52 districts of district management teams. This will help us in primary health care. Improve infrastructure for health care. We are going to do three things, as I said. Firstly, these 5 key hospitals. The reason that we are doing this is not only to improve public health system, but it's also to improve the issue of of HR, which members of this committee have raised many times. The fact remains that regardless of our best intentions, when you talk to the deans of medical schools and say, please increase the intake of medical students, they tell that our facilities can't carry them. Even if you give money and bursary, they simply cannot carry them. Now, we believe if we are going to increase that capacity, this tertiary complex is the 5 of them. This is in the Eastern Cape, this in Gaute, this in George Mukari, this is in Limpopo, this in King Edward, which has already had about 3 blocks closed. We are not talking about actually starting renovation. We are thinking about any new things and making sure that this hospital is brand new, so that we are able to increase the number of people who are seen there, but we are also able to have better hospitals. A good example is Chris Hani Baragwanath Hospital. A few weeks ago, South Africa woke up to find a very important operation down there. 5 months prior to that, we wouldn't have done it. It was possible because cut plans as a program. Said we are no longer going to criticize health. They mobilized funds in from the private sector, renovated the neonatal unit, built a new theater there, put up a lot of new equipment. That's why doctors were able to do that, because we are arguing very strongly, and nobody can deny that. That we have got the best doctors in the public health hospital, because that's where the professors are. But people believe the best are in the private sector. The ones in the private sector are taught by these professors at our universities. All they need is equipment to do their work. They are the teachers, but they teach you today. The following day, you go to private sector, you believe you are better than them. You know it. And after all, the first ever performed cardiac transplant was done in a public hospital, not private. So we think, in fact, I was told by, Lord Nigel Christ, who is credited for what has happened to the National Health System in Britain, that South Africa has gone more private than Britain in healthcare. We've gone more private than Britain. The British people use public facilities more than us. We use more private facilities. And it's the best reflection on the public health system. If a country that is that advanced, more public than we are. So we believe the reason is that most of our hospitals are collapsing and they need to be improved massively. Improved infrastructure for healthcare delivery. We need to revitalize all primary healthcare facilities. And we'll be telling you exactly what we need to do in some of them. In some of the far rural areas, Since that facility is where pregnant women can sleep there and deliver the following day, because they don't have transport. In some areas it's possible, not something that is absolutely impossible to do. But we will come up with a plan. We also need to accelerate health information technology so that one institution can speak to the other. Improved patient care and satisfaction. Key strategies interventions during this period will include ensuring that 30% of the 400 public sector hospitals we conduct at least one patient satisfaction survey per annum, just to see how satisfied our patients are at least in putting 30% of them. And we'll grow that figure to 50% by this time, and by 2012 we should be doing it all of them. We need to fast track improvements in six priority areas of quality of health care. If we fail in all the other areas, at least this, every health facility needs to do. Positive and caring values and attitude, reducing waiting time, improved cleanliness. I spoke to eight CEOs of hospitals in November last year. This is already happening in some, like in Sali Barabara Hospital. It's definitely cleaner than it was when I visited last year. Definitely. Even the president confirmed that when he was there on Monday, 2 weeks ago. Just the issue of cleanliness. The issue of improved patient safety is still a challenge. The issue of infection control. When we were in Britain, speaking to the Department of Health, they told us that this was one a big problem in their country, and they dealt with it by putting an infection control there so that people don't get hospital-acquired infections. The issue of availability of medicine supplies, the fact that we don't have to stock out. And we realized that apart from the weaknesses in the tender system, the other weaknesses that CEOs thought is the job of Parliament to make sure that they are supplied. They don't participate. Not even to tell you that in 2 weeks' time we'll have run out of medicine. And we are saying part of solving this problem, even before you improve the government tender system, which we are busy reviewing, there's already a report that I'll be studying, which has been concluded by the end of February. Even with that, if a CEO knows that it's his job to make sure that they are supplied in, and he tells us 2 weeks in advance, because many of them just fold their arms, we start reading the newspapers that this hospital ran out of something. We want them to participate in the supply chain, the CEOs of hospitals. And so that this talk out must be a thing of the past. So these six things we believe are very, very important. And we believe, as members of parliament, when you do your foresight, I mean your oversight, I nearly said foresight, you are jumping ahead of us. When you do your oversight, we think it would be easy to check this. Because I was arguing with CEOs who were saying, no, we need a budget, we don't need extra budget to make your hospital clean. That poor management, really. To improve patient safety also, we don't think you necessarily need. Most of these things, really, need management. I once went chairperson in Masala Hospital in Bush Park. There was a nursing sister. If he's not on duty at 4 PD, there are very long queues, definitely, I can tell you. If he comes back the following day, there are no more queues. It's just an issue of organizing. Other people believe no, increase the number of nurses, increase this. You also need to organize these things and they can reduce your waiting time. That includes also the festive and caring attitude. For instance, on this HIV/AIDS campaign, I am meeting CEOs, I told them this. If we run an HIV/AIDS massive testing campaign in our hospital, the man at the gate, whom you call a night watchman, does he know about it? Because when people come, they start at the gate. You'll be with a lot of curious, you know, put on that. Then I said, we will get your management skill by the way you deal with your people. The man at the gate must know. That is a campaign here. And know how to refer you. The lady who is a cleaner must also know that there's a campaign in this hospital. Once people manage like that, I can tell you things will improve. And I'm convinced that these are issues of management. Because the first time I went to Bar, I met the professor, they were saying, no, meet the union, particularly in the house. They said, no, if you can talk to the house, this hospital will be clean, go to Kosati and speak to them and all that. I never did that. I just put the better CEO. That hospital is clean. We just put one better CEO and a woman for that man. Chairperson, I want to emphasize that. Mm-hmm. That hospital can. Because who is telling them is not in how and all that. It's your management. Hello? Sorry? Yes, exactly. And we believe South Africa really achieved that in many areas. Because many people believe we need something extraordinary. We know that's why we believe this thing can be achieved. Improved patient care and satisfaction, again, I've already mentioned about the quality of health care in our facilities. Let me not say more that. Accreditation of health facilities. The quality management accreditation body and act of parliament, which will very soon be in front of you and go to parliament to be passed to establish this body, which will be accountable to the minister but independent of departments, meaning they have set standards and say you must reach them. If any CEO doesn't meet that standard, because it's an act of parliament, then we are able to take action. And the standard will include the 6 things I've mentioned. They need to be legislated upon so that people must know that the minimum quality of health care that is needed in our hospital. We are going to amend the National Health Act actually to facilitate this. When I'm saying an act of parliament will come, we'll use the whole National Health Act amended to bring the quality and management accreditation body. And we'll do auditing of 20% of all these health facilities by 2011 and increase, I mean, so that they develop good standards and increase to 70% by that. Still under operating, increasing, enhancing operational management of hospitals. This is done by the DBSA. They've been working on this chairperson. I know members of this committee have been asking me where I've been studying. We didn't want them to start half-paid job. They've been training from August last year. We want them to visit it in any hospital. I don't want a report here that will be general and say in this region the situation is relatively better in that. We want a report hospital by hospital. Is it functional? What is the problem? Is it efficient? What is the problem? Is the organizational structure efficient? I mean, is it the correct one? I can already give you an example. I know the answer is even for this research. Many of our mayor hospitals got no maintenance person. You put up a big hospital like Chris Adi Barabanat, the biggest in the southern hemisphere. I mean, it's huge buildings. When we visited there, the premier was joking that you can have 3 halls in that hospital. Through municipal hall, and have 3 mayors. But that whole institution depends on public work. It doesn't have a person who wakes up every day there and say, maintenance is my work. But there's a CEO, a financial manager, you know. But how does that work? Then you visit and say, no, this sewer is here. We call public work 6 months ago. If they are not resident in that hospital, it's not going to work. My suspicion is that the hospital where I studied, Sinyadwa, that is the fate that they fall into, because 3 blocks have already been pulled down. I don't remember. So the first thing we did in health, in terms of organizational structure, we have hired an engineer in the Department of Health Commissioner. There's already a great deal of improvement. In provincial health, yes, in provincial health department has been instructed to hire an engineer. They are going to form a team to move around the whole country and monitor this team. And I'm addressing that team next week, about Tuesday. It makes a great change. Yes, that engineer is not building for you, but it's monitoring. It's making sure that when you call somebody from public web, yes, he doesn't take 6 months but come tomorrow. And you sit him here to make sure that please repair this. This is what we have not been having in our hospital facilities. And we are really reaching there, I can assure you. In the next 5 years, we'll see very serious changes in this regard. We also want to conduct a feasibility study to establish management and leadership academy for health managers. Chairperson, South Africa is the country that wants to do miracles. All over the world, people get trained first before they do some job. Even a health manager needs to be trained to be able to do that job. So we need to establish that. I understand the study we have already done with the University of Pretoria to see if we can't have health leadership management course. So that we have got a leadership there who are trained and we refer them to a health center for them. We must obtain accreditation of management leadership academy for health managers from the Council of Higher Education and South African Qualification Authority by 2012. There must be a special qualification. If possible, South Africa must know if you didn't went through this institution, don't even try to apply to be a manager in our healthcare institution. Because how are you going to manage? The issue of human resources, I've already said it's a big problem. The planning, the development, and the management of health resources, human resources. And we've got all those plans there, in the next, which we are targeting the next 5 years. For our client strategy for increasing the production of key primary health care workers, for instance, environmental health practitioners are no longer in our system, infection control nurses, and the mid-level health workers. By the way, at the moment, it's only one university in the country. That is the medical university in Eastern Cape, in Ontario. That is training mid-level workers. Not everybody has to be a doctor trained for 6 years to be able to perform certain things. Mid-level workers who are trained for 3 to 4 years, who are not lowering standards. Many countries are doing that. For instance, quite a number of things are simple to do. Mid-level workers can do. Some have already asked us about that if you go on a massive treatment campaign for HIV, you can't rely on doctors. You won't have enough doctors to do that. There are certain types of health workers who can do that, and we call them mid-level workers. We want to increase it from this university. And we understand there are countries overseas, even in Europe, who are already doing this. And we need to go and learn from them. I understand, if I'm not mistaken, Holland is one of them, which is massive on this, and they've got better health outcomes. We also need to improve financial management by establishing a dedicated provincial finance and budget support unit in the National Department of Health. We've been having problems with budget, you know. We do have already got a unit under CFO with provinces because we want them to work together. And then this year, by March 2011, we must have actually produced a legislation that was sufficient for cabinet and parliament. We believe this is just a thing we are putting forward. We can even do it this year to start the issue of NHI. After all, Barack Obama has already finished his. No reason that South Africa should be. Strengthening health information systems. Developing and implementing ICT strategy. I've already said this together with e-health. Chairperson, we believe one of the interventions that South Africa needs to do is to finalize the youth health strategy by March next year. Strengthen the provision of skills for the youth. Most of the health problems are among young people. For instance, we have calculated that people younger than 15 years, 40% of them are in KZN and Gauteng alone. 40% of people younger than 15 years in the country. KZN alone is carrying 23% of them. If the high prevalence of HIV is anything to go by, imagine that number of 15-year-olds going to become positive over the years. So we need a clear health use strategy. That will also target on alcohol shares. The weakness of our strategy is that increasingly alcohol is a problem in the country. And we need a clear strategy for the youth, whereby most of our, finalizing and implementing the mini drug master plan by 2011 to reduce the usage of illicit substances, especially by the youth. Myself, the minister, deputy minister of safety and security, and myself, we're up for a meeting by the premier of Western Cape, Premier Bill. As you are sitting with us outlining this issue of drugs, what's actually happening, you realize that if we don't attack this issue, we'll no longer have the country. Very soon, we'll no longer have the country. I listened to her attentively because in the Western Cape, I remember when I was the MEC for education, I used to get scared. I'm supposed to be a doctor, but when you listen to teachers here, telling you certain symptoms of what they see among kids, you will believe those teachers are doctors. They will tell you that when he's behaving like this, kick, when he's doing this, they know them. And realize this problem is very big. Why a principal of the school even knows the symptoms more than doctors and can diagnose? It's a huge problem. So we need to attack this issue among our youth. I know it's going to be a bloody battle because we are going to be everything on choice of saving for people. But we need to do so. Premier Zilla was saying the people who read about in the press who are caught are what he calls one tablet dealer. The people who are caught by police because they are holding one tablet. The actual kingpins who are producing, we have not yet touched them because they are extremely sophisticated. So we need all the power we can have in the world to fight that sketch, especially in the Western Cape. Otherwise, our young people are gone.
Yeah.
the issue of community health worker together with social development, you know, there is a cabinet, rather a cabinet committee decision process, and Brazil has put up this lesson. In South Africa, there are people in the Department of Health, in the Department of Social Development, in the Department of Local Government and Traditional Authorities. I mean, cooperative governance, this is the wrong name, sorry. Cooperative governance and traditional authorities. In these three departments, if you can check, let me add NGOs, by the way. NGOs. We've got people there who are called by different names. Community health care worker, home-based care worker, you know. But they actually do the same thing. But they do it differently. With different salary schemes, some are temporary, you know. And they are causing community problems. Some communities are already complaining. I was launching a immunization program, I mean vitamin and the women program in Limpopo, and one lady put it very clear and eloquently in Guyana in Limpopo last year. She said, you know, when you thought you were the same government, you sit in your house, somebody comes and says, no, I'm coming for HIV AIDS. 2 hours later, another one comes and says, no, I'm coming to check if there is child support grant. 2 hours later, another one comes and says, no, I'm a community health, I mean, I'm a community health worker. Yeah, community development worker. You must sit and listen to all these people. And you think they come from the same area. So we need to integrate them. Brazil has taught us a lesson. They said one of the reasons why their infant mortality and maternal mortality is low, they established 30,000, not people, teams, primary health care teams around the whole country. You put these people in teams so that when one is going to a house, the others know, so that they don't go one by one, you know. But this unfortunately developed over the years. Even NGOs are doing it. Quite a number, if you want to check, just go to HIV/AIDS and find the number of NGOs who are sending people into families every day. Even they do them differently. I come from this NGO, 2 hours later from that NGO, 1 hour later, you know. Same family. So we need to interface and see, can these people be collected? And some of the NGOs are collecting money from government to pay these people. Why can't the government hire them directly? Because if government doesn't give the money to NGOs to pay them, they won't be paid anyway. Why can't they be directly hired permanently and be primary health care workers who are given a battery of things which they must do when they enter a family? You might not be a specialist, but you may know where to refer. And chairperson, I don't want to agree to accept that if you are well-trained, you can fail to get into a house, talk about contraception, talk about condoms, talk about HIV AIDS, and check if there is child support grant or if people have got an ID. I don't think that is possible. And I think that's very much achievable. So it's only that because there have been this lot of people, it's going to take a long time because many of them are going to fight, many of them are going to, there's going to be a lot of fights between local government and social development, but mostly between government and NGOs who will say, look, these are our people. We have trained them and we've been working with them. But we believe we are one country. We are one country. These are the major campaigns that we are going to launch this year. On Friday, we are kick-starting the Kick TB campaign, which will end in March 2011. It must be a huge campaign in schools about TB, and we are launching it in Togoza this Friday. The H1N1, we believe we are ready to start. Members of Parliament have been queuing us about MCC. I can report today, Chairperson, that all the vaccines that have been contributed and we have got, the Medical Control Council has passed them. That lady can confirm that the register is there, they have passed them. There's nothing which stops us from immunizing H1N1. We will start. Measles and polio, I told you, it must be a huge campaign. We believe we'll start it by the 12th of April 2010 and end on the 21st. HIV cancer and testing, I've already told you, it will start on the 15th, and, you know. And second round for your vaccine. Chairperson, and let me tell you one thing. I don't want to hide it and pretend. These are massive campaigns with lots of risk, especially this one. In terms of logistics, these are massive campaigns. But we have got no option, we need to go through them. And we believe we need your cooperation and understanding. And responsibility. I am saying responsibility, Chairperson. Because, you know, when you start vaccinating, H1, polio, measles, etc., people start asking questions about side effects very carelessly and scare the population. I know there was this question, and I was very irritated at it. I'll tell you why I got irritated. Those questions kill people, even in advanced countries. Lord Nigel informed us that, in fact, I'm not saying members must not ask questions. Let me tell you what I'm talking about. There are many quacks who are internet quacks around the world who want to be famous. A quack who wants to be a scientist but is not recognized. All he has to do is to post one scare tactic, one scare sentence on the internet, and people pick it up, and we all happy. And so Nigel was saying, even in a country like Britain, the measles immunization fell by 15%. We're not the only ones who are living an outbreak of measles. Britain has got, because one quack who wanted to be famous just posted on the internet about the side effects of the measles vaccine. You know, the story of autism. Measles have been used for hundreds of years, but now parents are casting chances. And we'll all die. I'm not saying don't raise this thing, but polio, for instance, polio is a big problem in Nigeria because of the same thing. You go on the street in Nigeria, you find the kids with one small leg, one big polio, not working very well, because somebody put the scare about the polio vaccine. All I'm saying is that this is gross irresponsibility. Gross irresponsibility. The story that was put in Parliament about H1N1 having been recalled, it's not about side effects. It was efficacy of one bed in America. All throughout, the World Health Organization has issued 107 million doses of H1N1. Look what has changed and what side effects. And I'm not saying side effects don't exist. But in any country, if you approach the population with any medicine, even if it's Palazzo, you start with side effects with them. Then you are saying that medicine must not be taken. Even if it's Palazzo. So, especially if you are a very responsible leader and people are able to listen to you. So, I'm saying when we run this campaign, we need your cooperation. Our children need it. No child must get polio. Because you are not aware that polio is irreversible. Can't reverse it. Once you've got it, one leg is small, however, if it is the muscles here, if it's the chest muscles, you won't even breathe, you are going to die before you reach the 5 years of life. And so this massive campaign needs to be undertaken by South Africa very responsibly. This massive HIV campaign needs to be undertaken very responsibly. And the polio, because we believe here, and the World Health Organization believe it, that in the same way that in 1970, the World Health Organization stood up on the stage and said, we have successfully eliminated smallpox. That was through vaccination testing. And they said, it's clear, eliminated, it's gone. Our dream throughout the whole world, as healthcare practitioners, is that the World Health Organization ought to stand up one day and say, polio is gone. This is within our reach, and we can only do it through immunization. So these campaigns are going to be the most important campaign that the country has ever undertaken. Resource envelope to implement. Chairperson, can I use this? I'm not a money person. Not that I won't be accountable, but even at school, I can assure you, I will have failed accounting if I was supposed to do it. So when it comes to money, can I give it to those who know? I don't know whether it's Dr. Pili or Ms. Bailo who will come with it. Okay,
Dr. P. will take over. Good. Okay. Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, Minister, I'm just going to continue the presentation. In terms of the resource envelope, all the slide says is that even before we will start the financial year on the 1st of April, we will start with a deficit because the Treasury has asked all departments to give them sufficiency take all efficiency gains, which are essentially cuts in the budget. And the efficiency gains, which is the last bullet, would be 47.8 million in the next financial year, that's 2010-11, 51 million in 2011-12, and 54.5 million in the outer year. So that's what we're discounting. The next slide shows you the budget allocation. And the budget allocation then for 2010-11 to the National Department of Health as the bottom line is 21.4 billion rand. The 2011-12 total is 23 billion, rising to 25.8 billion in the outer year. The key thing to note is that a significant proportion of these funds are conditional grants to COVID. The next slide, which shows the allocation by budget program. Members would recall that we have six budget programs in the department: administration, strategic health programs, health planning and monitoring, human resources, management and development, health services, and international relations, health trade and health products regulation. And you could see that the last two columns I think are important. On administration, there's just a 2% increase from the baseline, which is 09-10 to 10-11, and a 13% increase in subsequent years. Strategic health programs, a 28% increase from the first year, rising to 20% over the outer 2 years. 3% and 5% increases for health planning and monitoring. 5 and 6% increases year on year for human resources. 18 and 5% for health services. And 16 and 8% for international relations, giving us an overall 19% increase in the budget for the Department of Health nationally from 09-10 to 10-11, and a 10% increase from 10-11 to 12-13. However, we would like to highlight a few things about this allocation. Which is the next slide. The first two I've spoken to already. Should be noted that despite these overall increases, which is the third bullet on the slide, for the National Department of Health operation, subtracting out the conditional grant, which goes to provinces, there is a 6% decrease in the allocation to the National Department of Health between 09-10 and 10-11. The increase, therefore, that we see, the 19% and 10%, is largely conditional grants, and within the conditional grants, largely for the HIV and AIDS grant. Other grants receive more or less an inflationary increase. Just again to note, the department's conditional grant account accounts for 95% or more of the total National Department of Health budget. So this 5% of the 21 billion comes to the National Department for its operation. So excluding the conditional grant, how have we allocated the money within the National Department across the six programs? And again, Honorable Chair, I'll just focus on the bottom line, that the baseline, 09-10, we have 1.7 billion rand allocated to the National Department. In 10-11, 1.6, see the decrease of 6% that I noted earlier, 1.7 in 2011-12, and 1.8 in 2012-2013. And you can see the distribution across the various budget programs. So for the administration then, you have a 2% increase from this year to 2010-11 and a 20% increase thereafter, a minus 16% increase from this year to 2010-11 for strategic health programs, a minus 19% for human resources, 14% increase for health services, 16% for international relations. So overall then a minus 6%. So 6% decrease in the funding for the National Department's operation between 9-10 and 10-11, and an increase of 9% for the outer 2 years. The next slide explains this. The negative growth under program, strategic health program, is really due to the one-off allocation by Treasury to the National Department for the H1N1 outbreak. And largely it is for the purchase of vaccines and to conduct the H1N1 vaccination campaign that the minister referred to. In terms of the human resource deficit of 19%, that's accounted for by the one-off allocation of the 10 million rand for the Audit of the Nursing Colleges project. sense, those two amounts account for the decrease for those two programs. The increase in the health services program is largely accounted for by two provincial grants, the National Tertiary Services Grant and the Hospital Revitalization Grant, and the increase in the International Relations Trade and Health Products Regulation Program is due to additional funds for the new Medicines Regulatory Agency and to develop IT systems and to decrease the backlog of medicines registration. Looking then specifically at the conditional grants and the allocation across the five conditional grants, the bulk of the conditional grant, as I said before, is HIV, which at the baseline is 4.3 billion rand in 09-10, and it rises to 8.7 billion rand in 2012-13. The forensic pathology grant, which is for blood and mortuary services, increases from 501 million to 619 million rand. The health professions training and development grant rises also from 1.75 billion to 2 billion rand in the outer year. The hospital revive grows in a limited way from 3.3 billion to 4.3 billion. And honorable members, this is where the PPPs will start adding additional resources to our hospital revitalization program, as the minister suggested earlier. And the National Tertiary Services Grant rises from 6.6 billion to 8.1 billion. So in terms of conditional grants, the current conditional grants account for 16.6 billion rand, and they'll rise to 24 billion rand in the outer year. The new allocation, the additional funding that we received, I'll go through them very quickly in terms of how they've been allocated. The new allocations over the MTS really amounts to 8.6 billion for all conditional grants over the MTS period, 1.8 billion in the new financial year, 2.8 billion in the following year, and 3.9 billion in the outer year. Of those amounts, the HIV conditional grant gets an additional 1.7 billion rand in 2010, 2.8 billion in 2011-12, and 3.9 billion in 12-13. And this is specifically to improve access to treatment. In terms of the announcements made by the President on the 1st of December last year. In terms of the hospital revive grant, there's an allocation of 140 million for the Mitchell's Plain Hospital. The Minister spoke about the Office of Standards Compliance. We've got some additional funds over the NTEF to implement that that policy decision. 2 million in 2010-11, 8 million the following year, and 18 million in 2012. 13. So that's to ensure that the quality assurance program is implemented over the MTEF period. Over the page, the Minister indicated that in order to strengthen the national department's support to provinces on both budgeting and expenditure, we will create a provincial finance and budget support unit within the national department, and we received the amounts as indicated, 12 million rand over the three financial years, 2 million in the coming financial year, 4 and 6 in the outer year. The National Department also has a personnel budget shortfall, and additional funding has been provided by Treasury for the during the MTF period for compensation of employees. 22 million in the next financial year, 24 million in the second year, and 30 million in the outer year. I think it's true to say that the forensic chemistry laboratories have received some negative press in the last couple of months, at least, if not in the last couple of years.
Yes.
And we had put in a budget to Treasury to strengthen our forensic chemistry labs. And now, unfortunately, we didn't get all of the money we asked for, which is usually the case, but we did get some money, 2 million for the coming year, 3 million in 2011-12, and 5 million in the outer year. And these will be used largely to employ additional forensic analysts in these three laboratories to address the backlog. We also have a small amount of money, 1 million rand per financial year over the MTEF to develop a new hospital reimbursement tool to look at how to link the case mix in each hospital in terms of the population they serve with the amount of revenue they should generate. Slide 49, we received small amounts of money for the measles and polio campaign, 20 $20 million is what we received in the adjustment budget last year, and in the coming 2 years, 10-11, $30 million, and 11-12, $20 million. The additional funds to fund this campaign will come from provinces. There's a one-off amount of $13 million in the new financial year for EMS linked to 2010. Next, I'll hand over to you for the conclusion.
It's a rabbit ball, eh? You keep on passing from one to the other.
This summary, I've really said most of the things. I don't need to repeat them. That the targets we've put here are very ambitious, especially the HIV, AIDS, and TB targets. But it's not as if we've got any alternative that the country we just have to face that. I like things like climbing Mount Everest, but we've got no option. We've got no choice, especially when it comes to prevention of HIV, AIDS, TB, the issue of maternal mortality, the issue of infant mortality. We have got no option but to climb that Mount Everest. And we will try our best that with the help of everybody in the country, we'll be able to achieve some of these targets. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much, Minister. That was the presentation from the department. I want to make a suggestion. After making some of these comments that I'm going to make, I would request that we go for tea. I'm sure there are some people who are diabetic here. So they need to have some tea, and then we come back and we engage. But it's going to be for a very short period. Let's make it 5 minutes, because the minister has requested that he goes early, so that we can engage him as much as we can. I don't know why. Is it a coincidence that you have asked for 4:30, Minister? And there's a member that has asked for 4:30 too. Maybe you've got an appointment somewhere. No, you know, I'm not going to mention who that day would. Okay, we'll just go for 5 minutes. But members, this is what the department is telling us they're going to do. And as a committee of health, this is where we need to follow them up on what they have said. And they've asked for money, and I'm sure we're going to be giving them that money. Let's have one meeting. In giving them that money, I still have a belief that it's not enough. But the problem is, if it's more than this, are you going to be able to manage it? But it's giving us hope, because you're saying that you're going to put in a lot of money on managing the finances. I want to allay your anxieties, Mr. Minister, on the vaccine. I think the vaccine is your own body cells that are fighting something. So you can never develop side effects from your own body cells. So those people who are worried about side effects from vaccines, they must go away. You can never develop side effects from your own body cells. The other part, Mr. Minister, I think it's very interesting that we've got academic health complexes, which the fact that you have mentioned. And I think they've been here with us, and they asked us, can they be moved to National Department of Health rather than remain with the provinces? Because when they remain with the provinces, they end up seeing primary health care conditions at the expense of academic hospitals. Mm-hmm. They've asked that, and I think that must be considered by the department. Mm-hmm. So there's another one, which is the health promotion. This one is something that was started in the Eastern Cape because of the rurality of the province. They worked on the health promotion, and the Walter Sisulu University produces health promoters. And I think health promoters are very key in primary health care. And they've actually gone to an extent of saying, we want to be registered with the HPCSA, but they're still having problems in doing that. I would request, I'm going to talk to the acting HOD so that they can have a meeting with him, because they've asked me to have a meeting with the department. So, members, this is the situation. We want to oversight them. They've told us what they want to do, whether you would call it ambitious, Minister, but we think that we are going to take you on your word. But we'll ask you questions that we want to ask you after tea. It's only going to be 5 minutes. At 22, we must be back here, so we can go for tea and we come back.
coming.
The tea is still coming. Oh, I'm told that, I'm told that the tea is still coming. Maybe we can go to the toilet. So those who smoke can go for smoking so that the tea comes. Okay, members, we can eat while we're talking. The problem is that the minister is going to leave and we want to engage him. I've just mentioned a few things, Minister. One other thing that probably one forgot to mention is that we've looked at your target, some of us are grateful that you've got this target, something that we'll be able to monitor you on. But interestingly, we're discussing vote 15. But most of these things are going to be done in provinces. And unfortunately, the provinces are not here. They don't belong to vote 15. But in fact, I'm trying to say that we need to find a way of engaging these provinces and make sure that they do this thing that has been said. And even in your budget, you see most of the money goes to conditional grants, which is the money that goes to provinces. But members, I want to see your hands. Those who are, okay, I'm going to start from this end. Okay, Maltuli. Let's start with the whip. And then it's going to be Maltuli, Muresi, Moore, Mike. Oh, okay, I'll go down, I'll remember you. If we, I would request, members, if we can just be short and to the point, so that we can maximize this time. Okay.
Thank you, Chair. Our Minister, according to the information I have received, he said only 63 out of the 100 senior management service members submitted their PMA, internal performance management agreement. But those who did not submit the SPMA were not considered for both annual package progression nor performance bonuses. Now, what will the department do now to encourage 100% compliance? That's the first question. Second one is about the issue about the acting senior manager in the Department of Health. It's really problematic. How will this problem be solved? On the checking level,
thank you very much. Malto, I hope, Minister, you are recording, jotting down those points.
Thank you, Minister, for the very, very, very enlightening and invigorating performance. Minister, I had everything said, particularly on page 12. It really hit me now then. That on page 12, there was a basic math. Okay. Page 12. Yes. Where, you know, those 20 things there. And eventually I said, okay, improve health. It's page, 12. Slide 11. You know, I read through the whole thing and I said, what about the elderly? Maybe I'm selfish. The elderly somewhere should feature. Another reason for that, Minister, is that the elderly now are looking after the children of the youth who pass away because of HIV/AIDS. That should be the one thing. The other is, Minister, what is the position regarding the notification for HIV? Anyone would like to hear what you think about that? At this moment. And on home, you know, all those people who visit home, and all that, and all that. Minister, I think there's a problem there with that they are not supervised most of the time. So in my experience, what I found is that they just take it from the business. At the moment, I would like to just stop the...
Okay, thanks, Maltus. The interesting thing is that we're talking about the shortened life expectancy. But on the other side, we're talking of elderly.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
It's a contradiction.
Thank you very much, Professor. Really, this was very good, Minister. And I don't want to be negative. I want to look things positive, to be saying that what is being delivered today is what is going to happen. And I'm happy because you even talk about a great man. Because most often these beautiful books end somewhere. They never really disseminated to where they are supposed to. Slide 12, whereby we talk about TB case notification. I understand, but at my level, it is a bit confusing. What are we saying? Are you saying that when I'm having so many people in having HIV, I must try to notify less? It gives me the impression, because I think you could have really looked at another indicator, because all the cases, TB case notified. I said slide 12. Slide 12. Which talk about TB case? No, TB case notified.
Oh,
it's better, yeah. Okay. Maybe I'm having a lot of papers here. Because now it's been, it gives me, I don't understand it quite well. Then can we go again to slide 20? Slide 20. I wanted to know which talk about the cure rate. Yeah. The cure rate. I see that we are having a very serious problem of cure rate. But initially when we were using manual, the TB cure rate was good. This thing of electronic register, is it not having the problem because it shows other patients depending when is the register being submitted to the wherever the center of capturing. Then page 32 on the document. I wanted to know the reopening of nursing schools and colleges. What is the department's intention around the mushrooming of nursing colleges, because reopening of nursing colleges. There are a lot of nursing colleges which are private, which are producing not good stuff, and poor people at the end of the day, they think that they have got what it takes. Then on the slide 24, which talks about the management, the last one, management 24, where is it? Number 4, ensure that all 58 districts have district management teams with formal, whatever. I'm saying that there is now a problem around OSD. The OSD has really done what it was supposed to do in some people, but it has created a problem because now you find them and a deputy director in charge of the sub district is earning plus minus 378 per annum, while the assistant director, who is in charge of a cluster, and he's in community base, is earning plus minus 410. And this thing is really going to cause a problem because now the person is doing a vast, he is having a lot of scope of control is very vast. But somebody who's under him or her is earning much because of the OSD. Then the last one, I really appreciate the primary healthcare revitalization, which is very much articulated in this program. But now I'm having a serious problem because with the old clinics which we are having, the buildings are very dilapidated, there are gross shortage of staff, and there is no equipment. And I know that the three which I have just talked about, they cannot be afforded by the equitable budget. What are we going to do when we revitalize others while others are not in good standing? Thank you, Chief.
Yes, Memoir. You would understand the electronic counting of the TB cases. The lady who was asking the question is from the PTT of the ANC in Northwest. Now she's worried about Pulubane, the same Pulubane type of thing, that you must count manually. Okay, you must count manually.
Okay, thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honorable Minister, for the presentation. On page 17, let me just make people aware. I'll be using the strategic plan. This is where I did my proper. On page 17 of the plan, the Saving Mothers report also attests that 38.4% of the 4,000 maternal deaths reviewed were avoidable within the healthcare system. I think this is very, very serious, Minister. When I did my calculation, it meant 106 people dying unnecessarily. I'm worried about the issues of discipline. I mean, in hospitals, we need to revert back to disciplinary procedures. I mean, we've got labor relations. So I think we need to either reevaluate ourselves in terms of labor issues and the labor act itself to say, as we want to improve a lot of things in our healthcare system, issues of discipline are very, very important because then it talks to ethics and all ethical issues that normally people need to align themselves with. Then on the same page, it talks about knowledge development, where they talk about the recommendations of the CEMD. Focus on four main areas of areas. Example, they gave that knowledge development to say what has been done since these recommendations have been done. I mean, was there any knowledge? I know there's knowledge management unit that has been started in Gauteng, just to have an idea what is happening with those units. Are they really helping in terms of improvement of service delivery? Okay, on page 21 on the same book, we have where we talk about key activities under 4.2, assess the qualifications, skills, and competencies of hospital CEO, hospital senior managers, and district managers. I asked this question last time about what is it exactly that the government or the department is planning in terms of evaluating the CEO post the training, because we've got hospital management, we've got this primary health care management that is also given. I only know of this because that's where I attended my training, hospital management training. So to say, how do we hold people accountable in terms of we train you, you come back, do you implement, you know, and how do you plan to integrate that in the CEO's, what do you call, PMDS? And then on page 29, the second paragraph from the top, we talk about leadership structures of societies. We talk about hospital boards. I'm not sure, Minister, if you are aware that at some stage, one of the duties of the hospital board was to draft or submit a bi-monthly report where they've done the inspection of hospitals. What has happened to all that? As we need to train the turn them back? Are we talking about the new hospital board, or are we fading the old system out, coming up with a new system? And if so, how is it going to work in terms of improving the very services that we're talking about? And then let's go to page 38. Okay, on page 38, objectives and measures, the last bullet, finalize the implementation of OSD for diagnostic, therapeutic, and related allied health in 2010. Next. I just want to know, finalize the planning.
Where are you?
Page 38. Yeah. Objectives and measures, the last bullet. Yeah. I just want to know, finalize the implementation, I mean, the planning or the paying out, you know. Okay. And then on page 41. Okay, sub-programs, strategic planning, the expected outcome. It talks to the second one, enhanced quality and alignment of provincial strategic plans and ATPs with NHS priorities. Oh, okay, this one is actually a comment that is very significant and urgent. It's not actually a question. Page 42. Page 42, we talk to the strategic planning on the objectives for 2010-2011 to 2012-2013, the last box. It talks about strengthening the use of project management approach in the health system. I think this is long to having worked at Chris Ali Paragonas myself. I think if you can introduce project management in our health system, it will work wonders. But the challenges that it's going to pose is the human resource in terms of manpower. Manpower, because it's a project. And then the training that will have to happen for people to understand project management. I just want to know from the minister, how is this going to be implemented? And then on page 44, we talked about overhauling the healthcare system and improving its management. Basically, this was... Oh, okay, talking to the legal services and litigation cluster. It's not a question, it's actually a comment that we lose a lot of money due to negligent healthcare workers. And then it goes back to issues of discipline that I've spoken about in the first one. And then page 48, I'm finishing.
Okay.
Page 48, we talk about the objectives. And then we talk about the information and communication. You know, doctor, having worked at the hospital myself, we had a challenge where doctors don't want to use Medicom. They say it's a waste of time by the time they order, and there's issues of confidentiality when you order an X-ray, for instance, or whatever for the patient. So I see here you, not you, the government or the department is going to replace the current network operating system. They are going to use Novell Linux, and that's very advanced. I'm not sure it's going to pose a more threat to our doctors. How are we going to work around this? This is a good system, but if people don't want to use it, then it becomes something else. It becomes an obstacle to us actually achieving whatever we want to achieve. Then on page 90, we talk about developing and implementing disaster management policies. I'm not sure. We have disaster management policies in hospitals. We thought they were aligned to the national disaster management policies. So I'm not sure whether are we redeveloping new ones or are we just evaluating and strengthening the ones that we have. And then on page 91, introduction of NHI. I think this one I'll leave it because we haven't had much on NHI. And then the last one, just... No. This one is just general. It's on the issue of Batubili principle. I'm actually very worried. It's one of the principles that we have in the Department of Health that is very good. But people don't leave it, people don't do it. People just know it for interviews. After that, when they get the post, nothing happens after that. I think as we want to improve everything in the health service, let's maybe strengthen this in terms of knowledge development of this principle so that people can know it and live it and understand the implication of this principle on their daily work and the quality of service delivery that we want to have as an outcome. Thank you.
It's a No, you'll understand, Mr. Minister, we really, I think members want to ask you as much as we can, but I'm sure some of the questions can be taken to the other people from the department. Okay, Mike. You can go on, Mike.
Thank you, Chair. And I would like to thank the Minister for the presentation he has presented today. There's only myself and Dr. Matilda was here before on the committee, and we've seen a huge change in attitude, not only obviously from the Minister, different Minister, but also from the officials, and I just wanted to place that on record. And before, I think it came from the Minister and the DG, there's a lot of hostility towards the committee, and that seems to have gone. So I just want to thank you all for that, and particularly the Minister. Minister, if I can ask you a few questions about, first of all, the HIV counselling and testing campaign, which is very ambitious, and we obviously support you 100% on that. I just want to ask about the costing. I mean, what additional costing has Treasury given you and the provinces for this campaign? And what are you expecting? How success? I mean, you obviously have to budget for X amount of people coming forward for counselling and testing. So what have you budgeted for? How many people? Because you're going to need a lot more counsellors. How do you address that particular issue? And also the testing of the blood. How are you going to be testing the blood and ensuring that the money is paid over for that testing? And the reason why I raised the funding is because, as you know, Minister, many of the provinces, if not all, I mean, I don't know the exact figure, have overspent this year again, to some of them in the billions. So that's, it's a great concern that, I mean, we're glad we're having the campaign, but has additional funding been given? And as far as the costing of ARVs are concerned, you mentioned the costing of ARVs and how it is increasing. You mentioned in the paper that it's unsustainable. We need to have prevention to stop people from accessing ARVs in the first place, which makes sense. But in a reply to a parliamentary question, I mean, there are many, many new ARV drugs and generic drugs waiting for approval from the NCC. And if they were approved, and some have been waiting these 2 years now, and if they were approved, you could access a lot cheaper medication, which would bring the costing down. So what's been done to address that particular aspect with the costing? Okay, and then as far as, I'll just start, that's about the ARV, and as far as the slide 48 about the forensic chemistry laboratory, it is a problem. You mentioned that you applied for extra funding, but you didn't get all the funding. Can you just give us some idea what funding you did actually apply for, and how best will this funding help with the situation? Because people are waiting up to 18 months. Toxicology report. And I am Minister visiting all three laboratories, one this Friday and two on Monday, to have a look for myself. But I mean, it would be very interesting to hear your take on what would be needed to bring it up to speed. Then on slide 34, you mentioned here about the mini drug master plan, and that you had a meeting with the Premier Zilla, and one of the issues was alcohol. I mean, I think each province has a unique particular substance that particularly children are abusing, but alcohol, I think, is throughout. And as the Minister, you will know that I've asked a few questions regarding alcohol and, you know, bringing in regulations on the smoking, about the advertising of alcohol and not promoting it as much as we currently do. I'd just like to know, you know, what's in the pipeline regarding that. I do want to say up front that, you know, we can bring as many regulations in as possible. The parents have to play the most pivotal role, but I think we need to be outside from a legislative point of view. Then on slide 32, you mentioned the NHI briefly, and I won't go too much into it, because I'm sure we're going to have a big debate about it soon. The legislation is tabled, but I'm hoping that the costing of the NHI will be tabled with the legislation as well, so we have an idea about sustainability and affordability of it. Then, to do with the CEOs, just on the one issue on ARVs, I mean, the Minister mentioned just to do with the immunization of measles and polio, that we mustn't create fear in people and say, you know, the side effects, and that was our point. With the previous health minister, when she was saying the side effects to ARVs, It caused a lot of concern amongst the population and confusion, and I believe that is why we didn't have the uptake then that we should have had when we first rolled out ARV. So we fully support you in not trying to, you know, stir up emotions amongst the public. As far as the CEOs are concerned, I think, you know, it's an issue we've also raised, and we're glad that you are addressing this issue, Minister, that we do need competent CEOs running our hospitals. Without competent CEOs, the whole hospital collapses. And I think, Chair, if you think of education as well, I mean, we all agree that if you have a very good principal who's on time and has discipline in that school, the teachers are on time and prepared, and the school tends to function a lot better, even if they do need certain resources. And the same goes for hospitals. Without a proper, competent CEO, you can pump as much money as you like into the hospital. It's really not going to help. And we've heard that the department has had to cut costs because Treasury has demanded that. So, you know, by employing the right people as CEOs, you will get more efficiency out of hospitals anyway with the current budget that you have, never mind spending any more, and you probably could save a lot more. So we support that. But on page 27, when you talk about the, slide 27, so when you talk about the patient care satisfaction report, I mean, which is obviously a very good initiative, what assistance will be given to hospitals if they fail on any of those points, you know, like reducing waiting times or improved cleanliness? What assistance will hospitals be receiving in order to address those concerns? And what period will they have to turn the situation around? Then, my last point, check. Two last points. Slide 25, the PPP. And we fully support that principle and that initiative. We think it is high time that we utilize the skills and expertise in the private sector to help the public sector. There's no reason why both sectors can't assist each other instead of being at opposing sides. But another issue that could help cure the dispensary was the issue of allowing patients with repeat prescriptions to go to a pharmacy close to their work or home. And I know a pilot project was conducted, which should have been concluded by now, into finding out how feasible it is to allow patients to choose private pharmacies for the repeat prescription. I just wanted to get an indication as to how far that report is and what you're feeling on expanding that service. And then lastly, I know you touched on it with a bit of jest about people being overweight and diabetes, in particular, which leads to diabetes. And you have mentioned in the paper, and I agree with you that we do need to improve our lifestyles, particularly what we eat and a bit of exercise a day. You don't have to be a gym bunny to remain healthy. You just have to do a bit of exercise. But I'd like to maybe put out the challenge that we start here in Parliament, that we encourage MPs to lead by example, not to become, you know, supermodels or walk on like fruit, but to improve on their health, that's all, you know, and from where they are currently. And I think that would be a nice challenge and to MPs and to show the public that we're serious about personal health. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. I would further request that if we want the minister to answer all this, we just have to be short and to the point. Okay.
I will try and be as brief as possible. And I want to start by saying that we must say thank you to the minister for the manner in which he conducted himself. Chair, you know, when you listen to this minister speak, you get the sense that he is a man who is passionate about what he's doing. I mean, you get that feeling. And I just hope that passion and energy that he has will filter all the way down to the very worker in the public hospital. And if we can achieve that, then I think 90% of our problems have been resolved. So I want to congratulate the minister for that. Yeah, I'm equally encouraged by the comment on the opening of the presentation where the minister says that our healthcare system is predominantly curative in nature, and should have rather been preventative. On that point, I must just say that on slide 5, where you talk about the quadruple burden of disease, I'm convinced that on the first three points that you've raised, sufficient interventions to try and deal with that. My concern is just on the fourth one, and I'm not sure whether the minister has overlooked it, but I'm not convinced that there is sufficient interventions by the department being made to address the issue of violence and injuries. I know there is a link with alcohol and drug abuse. I was having a discussion recently with one of the heads of a provincial hospital here in the Western Cape, and she was saying, in describing the hospital on a weekend, which is common across many of the hospitals in the country, of how the outpatients department is more like a butcher shop on a weekend than an actual hospital, and to what extent that like a butcher shop, and the extent that this is having an impact on our ability to be able to address the issue of actual disease in South Africa, and how much of our money is actually being spent in dealing with chops and cuts and accidents and crime-related incidences and so on. So I would like to hear the Minister's comments on just that fourth point. The second one, Che, is again very encouraging to note that on slide 27, that there's an attempt to ensure that 30% of 400 public sector hospitals conduct at least one patient satisfaction survey per annum. I can't understand why this can't be done across all the hospitals, because it's a simple, unless of course it's a very in-depth survey, but at least some sort of a survey across all of the hospitals that will give patients a feeling that we want to try and address the shortcomings in this hospital. It's not a very difficult thing to do, if I can understand it. You walk into every bank and you see it. You walk into any corporate world, you see that there are patient satisfaction surveys that's being conducted. And now, to encourage the minister to see whether or not that can be implemented across all the hospitals rather than just 30%. Chair, very briefly, the last one is just a point of clarity on slide 47, where you talk about the personnel shortfall. Does that shortfall include the unfilled vacancies and healthcare practitioners, the shortage of that? Does this refer to that, or if you can address that if it doesn't, please? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wilson. Mark Ray?
I would like to be nearly the last one, because almost nearly the questions that one wanted to ask are already been asked. But I would like to congratulate our minister for, you know, giving us hope that it's not all doom and gloom. There's still light at the end of the tunnel. If we really are going to run behind him, I think anything is going to be possible. But the question that I wanted to ask is in addition to what my colleague has said about the human resource. I live in hospitals, I'm a patient, and what you see there is disaster. We are talking of the addition, lack of manpower. But what we have doesn't give us joy as patients in hospital. Does the minister have a program of reintroducing the culture of patient nurse, patient doctor back into the hospital with the ones that are in hospitals at the moment? That's the only thing that I can say.
Thanks, Michael. Thanks for being short.
Yeah.
Okay, Michael, the last one is next to me. Okay, Makan.
Thank you for that. I start by saying what has been just mentioned, as well as add on what has been mentioned by Honorable Waters on the issue of ECT. We plead that if we can start all of us here by showing that this program is so crucial, by going straight to it, to test, even before we go to anybody else outside. It is that difference to say to people there, as if there and us, if all of us, we are supposed to do it, if we can just go and test it. On slide number 27, on the issue of improvement, improved patient care and satisfaction, slide number 27, bullet 13. I'm worried there. I want to know what strategies or mechanisms are you going to apply, looking that there is a cry all over about the safety, maybe that what I'm going to say stands on the sentence of safety. Although it doesn't appear here, as you said, that the intervention are a priority. But I just want to know if you fast track this priority areas. What about the safety of patients in this case? There is a delay of ambulances, but it doesn't show there. I don't know whether this case belongs to the safety in hospital and safety at large. If an add the issue of ambulance delay, which is a cry all over the country, that patients die before they reach the place of safety, that is, place of safety health services. What services, therefore, are we going to apply, noticing that they cry? In the effect of the problem of the ambulance. And then same in the last paragraph, in the same 27, you say that services will result in between 25 days by 2012. Now, I'm not sure. Last paragraph. Complaints from users of services. Slide number 28. Letter 28. The last paragraph. 413 also. Complaints from users of services are resolved within 25 days by 2012. What precautionary measures are we going to take here? Because this goes hand in hand. We've had a staff talk about the ambulance, delay of ambulance. What are you going to do, therefore, in this year to see that they are resolved within these 25 days? Because this delay has been there for quite some time. On slide number 33, 4.18, bullet 4, we've talked about establishing a disease control hub by 2010 to 2011. What is happening now? Concerning the environmental health, noting that you are talking about environmental health practitioners. On our oversight at Free State, there is a story flowing in the Fall River there. So if we are talking about this disease control, what are we doing now to overcome that disease control, the river, that flow in that river? Also, at Eastern Cape also, there's a bucket stream overflow. To my understanding, that is environmental health. What are the practitioners doing about that? Are they monitoring these areas? Because the diseases, if you want to control them, you must start take control of what is happening on the ground. And slide number 34, bullet 4.19, reduction of drug usage. You say that you are looking at the reduction of drug usage by the youth, by establishing a mini drug master plan. And you further said you are just going to check the source of the drug dealers. Now, here I'm concerned about the drugs, for example, cocaine. That is always caught at airports being imported to South Africa. I don't know how I'm going to control that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The last one.
Okay, thanks, Chairperson, for allowing me to ask a question, even if I did not intend to do so. Minister, I'm not going to refer you to any slides. I'm just going to raise some points. The first point I wanted to raise was the issue of the impact of poverty on health services. Because, the manner in which we talk as if everybody is eating very well, and that's the reason why they are so sick. But that's another problem we have got to look at. But the other point is the issue of the PPPs. My only experience is the Free State one, where it was purely a javelin. The thing here about PPPs, there are people who believe that everything private sector brings is good, But I'm always suspicious, because private sector always wants to make profit first before they do anything else. So if we are going to embark on this PPPs, I think we have got to learn from our own experiences. And this thing of, as part of maximizing profits, you find that the labor broking becomes a normal practice as a result of this. I'm just saying, when we go on these PPCs, we have got to be able to say very clearly what does the public sector benefit out of that, and what does the private sector benefit. There should be, I mean, if it's partnership, let it be real partnership. It cannot be slided to the other side. The issue of nursing colleges, I think it's not a matter of whether you want to open them or not, but it's when, I mean, there are people who say they are there. So, but I'll stop there. But the problem is that they are not as visible as they used to be in terms of intake and production of nurses. But can't you look at it broader than just nursing colleges? If you have got to address your mid-level workers, as you talked about it, that you have got to have an institution which is able to produce these people. The last point, I don't talk long, you know. But the last point is the issue of health to management of hospitals. I mean, people can say, no, you just have got to have capable. But sometimes trade unions are very powerful, especially if shopkeepers can create an impression that they are politically connected, that they create more problems for the management, especially managers who are not politically connected, who thought that they are just getting a job. Somehow, such managers need help, particularly when they become decisive, that they don't get easily intimidated.
Thanks, Rekhana. I suppose, Minister, what probably should do, just take those that you think that they are very important for you, and then the others will be left to the officials of the department to answer. Okay, you can hit.
Yes, I'm sure they'll be able to see which ones I'm leaving behind. The issue of tertiary complexes is also our position. Coincidentally, I was discussing with the Minister of Higher Education. It is already in trouble. Maybe before the Ministry of Higher Education was there, it was even better. You can't have the Ministry of Higher Education and have the Department of Health National, but have some of these universities, part of them running the province. That is part. Because what it will mean is that the other faculties in the university are run through the Ministry of Higher Education at the national level. But only the medical faculties belong to the province. It's a very serious contradiction. We are going to work on it. But number two, these are national assets. They can't depend on how poor a province is. I mean, if you look at Eastern Cape and our capital, which is relatively new, which means health, if it depends on how rich or how good the budget is in the department, that university will never develop, even though it's a national resource. So we are looking into this. We took it to the health of, I mean, the National Health Council. Of course, we are all human beings. Some MECs here and there were starting to, you know. But we told them that let's look at this whole thing nationally. The other issue is notification of HIV. I'm just trying to choose. And of course, the issue of elderly is not that we are dumping them. If you look at our HIV AIDS campaign, we are going to be testing for blood pressure, blood sugar. It's not only HIV. The elderly can also come to test. And at the end of that program, we'll be knowing people's blood pressure, we'll be knowing their blood sugar, we'll be knowing their hemoglobin. And then we can look at the results and say how many elderly people need some form of help. So we are not leaving them all together. And the issue of supervising home care-based workers, I think I've already dealt with it. That is a cabinet decision that we need to review this. Do the audit and see how they are going to be taken care of. Because, yes, the reason that they are not working very well, they belong to different structures. And some, you know, in other ways, if they belong to an NGO or you come from government, they won't listen to you. Even when you see that they are not working, because they say, this is not our master. It's not paying our salary, so what is he doing? The issue of the opening of nursing colleges and what about the mushrooming? I'll combine with the last one. In my understanding, private nursing colleges have mushroomed because the state has not done well in training. The problem here is that a decision was taken in 1985 to train nurses at university. I know some of them get angry, but it's a reality. When you start training and left at university, at the first training post, you are leaving a whole lot of party below. Nurses must go to university, but after having been at the bedside. So here they are trying, when you say we are opening nursing colleges, we mean at the hospital side, at the bedside. If I put it in very clear terms and say, some of the good nurses started by watching a patient. That's how they started learning nursing and care. They started by treating a patient, not knowing anything beyond that, and develop like that. Now the ones who are training at university, they start by knowing high-power treatment at degree level. Yes. The example I give is like training commanders in the army. When they come there, they are already commanders. And you send them to the ground and say they must start as riflemen. When he knows that I'm a commander already, he says, no, go and start there at the bottom. He's going to refuse. For instance, he has never done night duty or sitting at the university lecture hall. Whereas people must start at the bedside and move to a university. You know, so that's where our problem is. That's the problem we want to reverse. Some people say we don't want university trained nurses. When it was done, I was a doctor, I know. We experienced it. And it's not something that is very good. Because nursing is a bedside experience. Not a theory inside the university hall. It's how what you do inside the, you know. Most of the nurses, I'm afraid, who are thinking over in London, if you check their qualifications, are not those who started at university, are those who started at the bedside. Those are the ones who are regarded as very highly trained. I'm saying this with a risk that people get angry when you say this, but it's the truth. It's not about undermining anybody. It's the truth of what you are faced with. Bedside training. And now, for instance, hospitals like NextCare told me that we don't want to train nurses, but we are training because there's no supply. It's not our core function. If the government doesn't supply, what can you do? They said it would be very relief if you go back to the basics and then we will do our core function as a private hospital because training is not our forte, you know. The issue of maternal deaths and disciplinary hearing. I'm not sure whether we have arrived there yet, but what the confidential inquiry said, the confidential inquiry on maternal deaths is that a number of protocols have been developed in the past, where even a midwife, I'm sure you remember the protocols, are put on the wall. And you can check that many of these protocols have been ignored. What you are doing in the department, you are busy putting them up now from the maternal and child unit. Such that even a very junior nurse can see at the wall a protocol. Just to give an example, that it doesn't need extraordinarily high training. After discussing this at the National Health Council, the MEC for Health in KwaZulu-Natal went to, King Edward is where I learned my medicine. It should be very high standard. He said he attended a perinatal mortality and a child who was discharged 3 days ago, very healthy, came back to die in the hospital after 3 days when they were preparing for CS. Problem, somebody discharged her without checking that the child did not have an anus. It was a perforated anus. And he was sent home with that and the mother did not recognize it. The child was not passing anything. Why is that a problem? You don't need to be a doctor. The protocol used to say no child must be sent home until they pass meconium. Full stop. Even the lady who's cleaning can check whether the next kid is showing something and say it's passing. But how did that child, was that child sent home? Carelessness throughout the whole health system, not sticking to protocol. Even a nurse who enters the hospital that day, if you show them that protocol, they can't make that type of a mistake. So we want to eliminate this mistake. Two protocols, put somebody who's responsible, and yes, disciplinary hearing will follow thereafter. But now there is something that is developing in the country, which is scaring about this when you talk about disciplinary hearing. I'm not sure whether it's a blackmail or it's reality. It is said that for gynecology, both midwives and gynecologists, the number is decreasing in the country because they are getting scared, because most education is in gynecology. The education that society undertakes is mostly in Guyana and the state. You are scaring these people of the number of health workers in that field. It's already going down. They say, no, let's take the other fields where education. Because South Africans are not used to this. Because that's where mistakes happen. If you work in a labor ward in Guyana, it's very easy to commit a mistake there. So I'm not sure, but we'll try to follow it and see exactly. Yeah. The hospital board, we are not going to reduce their function. We'll just change them. They are a very important resource. In our 10-point program, when we say we create social contract in society, you can't do it without hospital board. You can't keep over. In fact, part of the improvement in Bara, which I didn't mention, Kisani Barabana, they told us they've got a very strong hospital board. It's like having a good school governing body around that school. But my impression has always been, as Mr. Rotas has said, you know, if I give the analogy of education, if you get a good principal and a poor school governing body, that school can run, and the school governing body will still improve. Because the principal is the engine, is helping it. But if you get a very poor principal and a good school governing body, the result is conflict. It's not improvement. Because they're always fighting, it's sluggish. The parents want action, but he's in charge. The parents are in charge of him, but he's running the school every day. So what I'm trying to say is we'll improve the hospital board, but I believe the biggest improvement must be with the person running that hospital and the board coming in as a supportive role. That's what I'm trying to say. We have some people argue against that, but we have experienced it. Very good school governing body, poor principal, conflict. Very good principal, even where the parents are not educated in the school governing body, they start getting lively because they've got a person who's driving them. So even here, the CEO must be lively before. The implementation of OSD, we're just saying that outstanding OSD was for this supportive, what do you call them there? Allied professions. All that it says is the others have been completed, they are in process of implementation. The allied health professions have been very, very much behind. The ICT systems, I'm sure we'll talk to doctors. This thing is very important. We need to know the whole population. Because at the moment we are doing hit and miss. We need to have a system that talks to one another. You are aware that when free health services were introduced, stories abounded that people go to one clinic, collect medicines, go to the other, collect, and open a barber shop. Because, yes, this hospital doesn't have a database to check that you have already been treated for this disease. So this thing is very important. I'm not sure why doctors are rejecting it. The issue of Vasupil, we believe the 6 standards we put here, you know, because Vasupil is just becoming a song, they sing it. Now we think if you put them on these standards and say change them, they will be forced to actually implement Vasupil. Because at the moment, I'm sure they are already Vasupil fatigued. I was saying the province where I come from, every year there's Vasupil day where we sign, and everybody's watching, but when you go to the hospital, you don't find what's happening. It was a good thing, but you need specific things on which you help all them in each area of life, like in schools. The principals also signed back to pay. But we have to specifically say teachers must be in school on time teaching and put it there. So even here we are saying we are putting the 6 standards. If they adhere to that, then back to pay will be much better. And I think it will help the change of attitude. The costing, Mr. Waters, of the HIV AIDS campaign. Many provinces, if you check, they do have money for ARVs which come as a conditional grant. Their own budget is for prevention. Only that we did not have any targeted campaign. So that they were actually cannibalizing the money for prevention to buy drugs. We need a concerted campaign where they will participate. We are trying to budget machinery, for instance, to buy them the test kits, etc. It's not that every person who is going to get in here is going to have blood central approach. It's not going to work like that. There are test kits which you can also buy from a pharmacy, by the way, and test yourself at home, though we don't encourage that. Some are already complaining that we must ban those. I'm not sure because they said they'll write me a letter. Some are the South African Medical Association. They said they've got examples of people who go to the pharmacy, buy the test kit, lock yourself in the house, test. It shows a false positive, nobody's guiding you. You go and hang yourself. Whereas you should have, for instance, yes, without counseling. In this treatment campaign, for instance, we give you the test. If it is positive, we don't inform you are positive. We take another one from a different manufacturer to eliminate false positive. If both are still not, we are still not sure, we send blood to the laboratory. But if it is negative, that's how the protocol goes. So we are not going to send blood for everybody to the laboratory. Even the blood sugar, the hemoglobin, it's not laboratory blood. Use a hemoglobinometer, which the hospital got, or a glucometer. Only when it's high, then we say let's investigate. TB screening, you don't start by X-ray. We are going to ask 5 questions, which I won't tell you here because we are going to ask you. If you answer yes to any one of them, then we investigate you for TB. If I give you the question, we'll memorize them and answer appropriately. Yes. We ask for 5, and then if you say yes, that's one, we say this person needs TB screening. We are not just going to say everybody must go for X-ray. So it will be a fewer number of people who usually need laboratory. But we also spoke to National Laboratory Services that if you do this bulk of work, then the prices cannot just stay the same. And they agree they are waiting on them. You know? The issue of PPP, National Treasury is very experienced. Lesita Kanya will put it in my mother's hand because, yes, he comes from my province, coincidentally. He said in the past, PPPs were state school fees, are budgeted school fees, meaning we've learned. We know our lessons of which works. And one example, even the minister talked about it. The PPP is in correctional services. Any expenses, we're not gaining much from it. So we'll be very careful when you do PPPs, where you do them and how. Some of them look very good, by the way, but the expenses is just something that you can't live with. The healthy lifestyle, yes. I'm sure it's true, I'm going to start with you, but I'm happy that you've already mentioned. For instance, why don't Chairperson, you are a health committee. Why don't you form a club? Don't wait for me. I'm giving you a challenge. A club which says every day between this time and that time we walk. Mm. The people see you on the street. I'll actually join you. They see the health committee there, this is their health club. When you launch in Kailicha, I was going to challenge them because there are 60-year-old women in Guyana who started the soccer club. And they are, yes, and they are very healthy. I was going to challenge these women in Kailicha. Then they produced a group of women who were wearing ties, old ladies, and they were exercising. They've got a, you know, it's an exercise club there. You know, if you can duplicate this around the whole country, I can tell you most of these hospitals, entries which happens in the country. You know, so let's do it this. We'll walk. That day you thought the 5-kilometer walk. I invited all of you.
No, I played soccer.
And he came after the walk, but he did play soccer. Yeah. I think, Chairperson, I need to leave. I'll leave the other two. But before I leave, the counseling and testing, I'm going to write you a letter as members of parliament, as leaders. Yes, it's going to start with you. Even CEOs, I told them, if it's in their hospital, they must be the first one to test. They must be in front. So I'm going to be writing your letter about your role. We'll post you to many centers to encourage people, and we'll ask you without forcing you. If you go to this hospital as a member of parliament, why don't you become the first one to test? I asked the Minister of Health in Lesotho, who said they did this in 2005, I said, what is the most important achievement you gained? She said, no, stigma was one. People saw members of parliament, business people, celebrities, all having the same queue, like when you go for election. Then they realized, oh, now what am I scared of? Everybody is queuing for this thing. And you said the stigma, you know. So I'm really going to have a lot of job for you in this country. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Minister. We allow you to go. We are going to be taking on your word on the other thing. But these other the challenges, we're going to take them on. Thank you. Members, can you continue with the meeting? The questions are still on. Jürgen, it's up to you.
Honorable Chair, thank you very much. I'll continue answering the questions and then hand over to my colleagues, and I'll indicate who will answer which questions. I'll start with the questions, the comment you made about health promoters that water to the university. I'll have a bilateral review so we can arrange the meeting with them. What's true about health promotion is that we have a lot of activity around health promotion. Not just the Department of Health, but a number of government departments. But they're not very well coordinated. And the monitoring and evaluation of their impact is not very good. So even as we put more resources into it, we must improve the efficiency of health promotion. the senior management in terms of the numbers of people that are acting, starting with myself, I was hoping the minister would answer that question. But just to say that the minister did convene a panel, they did have interviews, and it was supposed to have been tabled at cabinet this morning. That's why because I don't go to cabinet, I don't know the result of that. I was hoping the minister would say, yes, the cabinet has made a decision, and this is the decision. So I can't say anything more about that.
You were not invited as a...
I was not invited as the acting. No. I'm not even in the race. because I'm quite mentally competent at the moment. Dr. Lutuli, on the elderly, we have a unit in the department dealing with chronic diseases and the elderly. And they have a whole program on what they're doing about the elderly. Maybe what I'll do is ask them to send you their operational plan on what it is that you're doing, focusing on the elderly, besides the HIV. The notification of HIV, we've been through this over the last 15 years. There are two broad camps. The one suggests make it notifiable, the other says don't. For largely human rights issues, the perspective from the human rights campaign is that it might create human rights problems. So the department has not made any decision. This issue, if it's raised, will be raised in SANAC, so that all of the sectors in SANAC can debate the issue and come up with a decision. It won't be just the department. The community and home-based care, lack of supervision, the minister spoke to that. The honourable member who asked a number of questions around TB and electronic registers left, but I'll answer them in any case. The TB notification, I do understand the member's point of view. See, on the one hand, we are saying that we need to improve case finding on TB. Find them, treat them, cure them. On the other hand, we are saying decrease the numbers notified. Now, clearly what that looks like is a bit of a tension between the two, that we're contradicting ourselves. But what we want to do is find them and treat them on the one hand, and then prevent transmission on the other hand, so that over time, the number of people with active TB does decrease. So that's the explanation. The extent to which we put HIV-positive patients on INH prophylaxis to prevent them from getting TB will also decrease the number of people who are HIV-positive that get TB. Because at the moment, as the minister said, the co-infection rate is around 73%. So clearly we need to decrease that fairly dramatically. There are a number of questions around OSD, and when I'm finished, I'll ask James Cornwall to respond to those questions. He represents us in the bargaining chamber. On primary health care, there's an audit being done currently on exactly those issues that the honourable member raised. What is the state of the infrastructure for primary health care? What is the state of human resources and the equipment? So once that audit is complete, we will know what the gaps are, what the deficits are in terms of human resources, infrastructure, and equipment, so that we can start filling them in. The key question, however, is should there be a revitalization grant for primary health care? I think that was enough of the question. And that's a policy issue that we need to take up. At the moment, there is no primary health care revitalization grant. It comes out of the provincial equitable share. So what we're saying to provinces is that they must, in the way in which they allocate resources, prioritize primary health care. The Honourable Morris asked a number of questions, some of which the Minister responded to. I guess the issue around avoidable care, besides what the Minister said, we have now a comprehensive list of interventions to address all of the 10 major causes of death amongst pregnant women. I'll give you two examples. One is the waiting mother's home. We are working together with provinces to get a list of those hospitals that are rural in nature, at which there are a number of avoidable deaths because of the poor ambulance services, so that they can be admitted to these waiting mother homes before they deliver. And we are approaching donors such as the German Development Bank to get some funding to build these. And they don't cost a lot. I mean, you can easily build one for $100,000 or something like that. So it's not a lot of money in the scale of things. The other thing we're doing is we're putting together teams of retired obstetricians and gynecologists and midwives to go to these, especially district hospitals, and sit in the labor ward, the maternity ward, and the neonatal ward to see what's going on and to come up with a program of intervention that is tailor-made to that facility with the resources that they have. And on obstetric emergencies, we are now have a team of people under the leadership of Professor Jack Woodley from KZN going around training people in obstetric emergencies because, again, we see there's a weakness to it. So those are the three concrete things we're doing amongst a range of other things. Strengthening project management and the human resource implications, absolutely true. It's very difficult to train managers and project managers and then get them to use it because they see it as additional work. So what we're trying to do is trying to figure out how to train people in ways that make it easy for them to understand that it actually will save you time and effort by doing a proper project, by using project management. In the National Department, we've got a project management unit, and we've trained large numbers of people. The challenge is the use of the technology. It's only as good as it is. Skip a few. Costing of ARV and NCC approval. On NCC approval, the registrar is here. I'll ask her to respond to the approval. On the costing, Honorable Waters, what we're doing is we've costed what it will cost with the new guidelines that we're implementing from the 1st of April. There are three key things that we need to do, but that we are currently doing. One is to reduce the cost of the ARVs themselves. Now, in the way in which we are structuring the new tender, we think we will generate significant savings in the way in which the tender is structured, possibly as much as 30%. So purchasing the ARVs will be cheaper. The second is we're going for fixed dose combination, both to make it easy for patients and also for cost purposes. The third is task management or task shifting, the number of ways to phrase it, and is to get nurses to be trained to diagnose, prescribe, and dispense, together with assistance from pharmacy assistants. And the third is we've reduced the number of laboratory investigations needed in line with a fairly big study that was reported in the Lancet last year that was done in a few countries in Africa. So we'll be decreasing lab costs, we're decreasing the cost of the ARVs, and we are task managers. So the unit cost, we think, should decrease fairly substantially from the current about 5,000 rand for first line and 11,000 rand for second line by about 30%, at least. Regulations for alcohol? Oh, sorry, the forensic chemistry lab. We asked for about 140 million rand. And you can see we got about 10 million over the 3 years. So clearly it's not going to be sufficient. And much of it was for infrastructure, and a fair amount of it was for hiring new increased number of analysts. Now what we're doing there is that we've got a small task team together with the NHLS to see if we can, even as we think through how we finance the forensic chemistry labs fully, is to better manage them. And the NHLS runs labs all over the place. So we think that we can get some kind of agreement with the NHLS to start helping us manage the labs better. So the task team is yet to report to the minister. We've given him one draft preliminary report, but we think we can move quite quickly on that. Regulations for alcohol, two things. One is, you know, there's already labeling of alcohol bottles containing alcohol. It would be interesting to see, it's just started, it would be interesting to see what the effect is. But around 2010, the 2010 team has been working together with the MRC, Charles Parry's unit, the MRC, to try and figure out what else we can do for producing alcohol around 2010 and beyond, and to look at how we can produce that beyond. It's not an easy thing, but any behavior change is not even. Patient satisfaction, six priorities, what assistance will be given to the hospital. We just always run the quality of care. I'll ask Dr. Marshall to say a little bit about some of these. Injury prevention. Honorable member, we have a we have one person in the National Department at the moment looking at this issue. We've got some technical assistance from the University of South Africa to look at what more we can do around injury prevention beyond what we currently do. So we are acutely aware of its importance, and we have something in line. The personnel shortfalls that I mentioned, Chair, is basically in the national department. It's firstly to fully fund the warm bodies we currently have, and then to hire a few more. It does not take account of all of the vacancies in the province. That number, Mr. Conwell might have an idea about, but that number is very large. So this is just the national department. On the disease control hub, there's a public-private partnership that we are exploring with Virgin Unite, which is the trust foundation of Richard Branson. And the policy issues aren't quite clarified yet, but there's a PPP between government and Virgin Unite that's looking at creating a Section 21 company that will take all the data from the public and the private sector, do analyze it, so they will employ epidemiologists, statisticians, public health specialists and that, and then provide guidance to the Department of Health and others on what needs to be done. That's the idea. But as I said, it's not been finalized as yet, but it's a PPP. Impact of poverty on health services, absolutely, honorable member. It's one of the key issues that drive ill health, and we know that. So key intervention there is really good intersectoral collaboration, and that needs to happen at all levels, but it's most important that district and sub-district. And that's why the IDPs, in our view, are so important. And the extent to which we have good IDPs and good implementation will give rise to better health outcomes, we think. So you're absolutely right. So I'm going to turn to my colleagues now, and I'll start on this side, and we'll go along to see who else can answer with your permission.
No, that can... I think one of the other things is that we are talking about Road 15. We didn't ask a lot of questions on the money, specifically whether are you happy with your budget. The second one is that we know we are talking about human resources. You cannot build a clinic and call it a clinic without nurses and doctors. But we're seeing the amount that your budget has increased in human resources is very small as compared to the other ones, which tells us that we are talking the other thing and doing the other thing. But I'm just mentioning those as you give over to the others so that they can answer those. You can give over to them. Okay.
When this comes to an end, the CFO will, I'm sure, comment on that. We'll start with
Mrs. Matar. Mrs. Matar is a soccer player, by the way. She's got a vuvuzela.
Thank you, Chair. No, it was just a comment. There was a question that was asked about the department's intention regarding injuries, violence and injuries. And that's to say that, in actual fact, there is a plan to implement a very coordinated interceptual intervention that reduce both intentional and unintentional injuries. One, that we have had a very long-standing and very successful plan with the Department of Transport in terms of arrival level is one of the better known ones, but in terms of dealing with motor vehicle injuries and youth health of the youth, etc., etc. So, and we've got a whole program that deals with household injuries, domestic injuries, and domestic violence, etc., etc. So the fact that the minister didn't comment on this, there are quite some substantial problems that up to now have quite good success, even though they were limited to specific provinces. If I look at violence in terms of rape and what, we've had a very successful lady from North from State sexual assault program that started in the Northern Cape and it started to spread in a whole host of nurses that are specific and trained under the CEDA fund. Forensic nurses on sexual assault and trained. They exist in the country. They may not be enough, but those do help in the sexual assault cases. And when the Department of Justice started the teddy bear clinic and often actually the nurses that were used were the nurses that were trained under the program. So just to allay the fears of the honorable members that violence and injury is a major concern of the department, and there are quite substantive programs that are that we are doing that we are carrying out and to address them.
There's a team that wants to invite the committee. They're in the alcohol industry. But they want to come and tell us that they know there are problems, but they are must be part of helping us. I don't know whether would you suggest to us that we accept their invitation.
So mine is a brief one. I really like to agree with and support the two issues raised by Honorable Mori around the need to align national and provincial plans. I think it's the point shared that has been raising as well throughout this discussion. There are already processes underway. The National Health Act requires us to produce annually an integrated annual national health plan, which takes into account the plan from the nine provinces and the national plan as well. And the recent initiative following from the cabinet accord of January is that the presidency wants what they refer to as the negotiated delivery agreement. So national must agree with provinces about delivery. And in our case, the delivery must be around the 20 outputs. And that delivery agreement is required by the end of April. So we are working on it. Thank you.
Yes, have you got two earrings or one?
I have two, Shepard.
Okay, no problem, me one.
We can discuss it after the
meeting. Oh, we'll discuss it.
Thanks, Chair. There were two questions that were asked about OASD. The first one related to what the honourable member referred to as a disparity between two levels that, in a normal hierarchical structure, one would expect that the deputy vice director would be the better earner, and therefore it would appear as though what OSD would have introduced is a disparity. Now, that is not supposed to happen as far as the OSD modalities are concerned, and therefore we aren't able to establish whether it's an isolated case or whether it is a generic problem around OSD implementation. So we would need to establish that, and if it's a specific case, then we have conducted some audits around OSD implementation. There are still quite a number of challenges, particularly around HR capacity in provinces at the institutional level. So we would expect that there may be a number of anomalies, but those we would have to resolve, you know, as you know, they present themselves. I should also indicate that because OSDs that were introduced, and if we take the health sector alone, we have in the region of about 238,000 health professionals. Core health professionals, not the non-core. And I think given the fact that health is so labor intensive with the number of professionals, it is when we look at the second issue around the OSD for medical and therapeutic, where we've got 54 categories that are waiting you know, implementation around the OSD, which is the question that Honorable Moore raised. The negotiations, they have concluded, but what is happening is the trade unions are awaiting mandate to sign that OSD agreement so that implementation can in effect take place. We have had a number of meetings with them to explore ways of trying to edge them on to actually you know, getting majority signature on that agreement so that implementation can take place as indicated in the staff plan for March 2010, but the other alternative is unilateral implementation, and that is something that at present we are not looking at because it would erode issues of trust and around good faith in collective bargaining. So we're in a kind of a catch-22 situation to try and get the agreement signed without appearing to place undue pressure such that there could be unilateral implementation. So we're avoiding that. I think the other question related to the issue of the vacancies at provincial level. We aren't able to establish that specifically because, of course, we face
the challenge regarding the vacancy, which would be a funded vacancy versus a post on the organizational structure that reflects what it is that you know, provinces would need to fill at some point in time. But at present, there's a separation between a post that has been vacated and that needs to be filled versus a post that is there and is not funded.
Okay, thank you. There are certain things that probably you would need to help us. At some stage, we wanted the human resource plan given to the members. I don't think we ever got that human resource plan from the department. I'm not sure members would remind me if we got it. We never got it. We still wanted the other thing, where this always is, who budgets for it? Is it national or is it the provinces? Because it's always a thorn in the flesh. But if you can answer it later, we can move on.
Okay. Maybe on that note, I should respond to say that at this stage, OSD is budgeted at national level after the negotiation. So once the negotiations are agreed, the Treasury is part of the negotiation, so they put money aside, and then the money goes straight.
Sorry, Acting Chief, there's just one thing that I need to... members, there's a bus that leaves at 5 for the parliamentary areas where people stay. But we thought that we're going to finish at 6. If we finish at 6 and there are no buses, there's transport that is going to be organized. So people should not be worried about buses and that. You see, parliamentarians don't have money. You don't have to do skills audit. We get onto buses. You don't have to do lifestyle audit on us.
Thank you, Chair. As I was saying, so once the money is agreed upon, Treasury allocates the money to the province.
I'm so sorry, Chair. The members, they just... you say there's a bus at 6. No, if there's a bus at 6, then there's no problem.
Yeah.
No, then it means they don't have to get us. So let's continue. We'll finish the 6. Okay, continue.
Okay.
Okay, continue. You are protected.
Thank you. So I was saying that the money for OSD is only put aside once the negotiations have been concluded. Because at that time, we will then only know what is the envelope. And then once it's agreed with Treasury, the money is put aside and transferred directly to the provinces. But it forms part of their equitable share. Then they have to ensure, as a health department, with their provincial treasuries, that money reaches the department. So that's how we manage the OSD funding. So maybe while we are there, we should also indicate that we could never be happy with the allocations, because we always need more to do all the mandates that we have as a health sector. However, in terms of the process that the Minister alluded to earlier, in terms of cost efficiency, we agreed with Treasury that this is the best that they can allocate for us, and we will have to do the best we can with what we have. And the Minister doesn't want us to say that it's less. Okay, so let me also respond to the question that was asked by the Honourable Member who left regarding the PMA submission. So the status at the moment is that for the current financial year, we have 100% submission of the PMA. However, we do have cases where there was no compliance, because compliance means by the end of April, all of us should have submitted. So they came in gradually. So the penalty for that is that all of those who did not comply with that is that they will be assessed, yes, but there will not be any remuneration should they be found to be deserving. So they won't get any remuneration. That's the first penalty. The second one is that we make a submission to the minister to make him aware who are those managers. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks very much. Is there a situation where you would consider the salaries of the health professionals in South Africa? Obviously, we'll have to discuss that with Labour, but is there something that... Because I'm saying this because health is health because of those health professionals. And if they're not getting good salaries, it's only these OSDs that come that time and they disappear. they're going to keep on living or going to private sector, and we're still going to remain with the same problems. But you don't have to answer it now. But it's something that is necessary.
Okay, but that's exactly what OSD is trying to address.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. Honourable Member Morey raised a number of questions relating to issues of discipline, problems with negligence, and the issue of Bartopelli. I'll deal with some of the more specifics around negligence a bit later, but I just wanted to start off by, oh, and there was another member, Grace, who also spoke about the issue of values. I think it's recognized that the starting point for strengthening the issue of values, professional values and ethics in the healthcare system, it has to come from the top. And the issue of leadership at all levels of the healthcare system, of role models, of leaders actually leading by example, I think the minister, I couldn't say any better than the minister, but that has to be the starting point for getting the issue of value back into the healthcare system.
I think there's lots of stuff with him.
It has to. But then it has to, people have to pick it up all the way down the system. And I think that really, people get with me exactly that. And I think that is how we're going to turn around the values within our healthcare system. It's leadership at every single level of the system. And I think that's been shown internationally, that without leadership, without the will to make changes, management rules and regulations are not going to make a difference. And I think we do have examples here, and we just need to make sure that throughout the system we are following that example. And it's not just soft stuff, it's absolutely indispensable, because it's not going to work without that. But I do think that we're doing a second thing, which I think will feed into that, which is the issue of enhancing accountability. And the minister spoke about standards, he spoke about the accreditation body, he spoke about the importance of this being reporting directly to him. And I think in his speeches he has made clear that accountability has to have consequences, that you cannot simply say, well, that isn't good enough. And I think he actually said, when he responded to the State of the Nation address, he made very clear that measurement of compliance with standards has to have consequences. Those consequences are not just negative, they also need to be positive. So one does need to look at things like recognition of work well done, recognition of the kinds of health professionals around the country who really are providing good services with the same inputs, the same level of resources, the same staff that may be available to the hospital 100 kilometers down the road that doesn't produce the same results, and it's back to leadership and management within those institutions. So a system for making sure that accountability is strengthened through objective measurement of compliance with standards. And I think that is what will assist with the leadership and ethics strengthening through the system. The second point that was made was about I'm going to take the question on staff satisfaction surveys. I'm going to invert it a little bit. You asked why not in all hospitals. Two reasons. Number one, we do have a standard protocol, but what we have picked up is that there appears to be a discrepancy between the results we're getting out of the standardized protocol, which all provinces have agreed to implement, and the results we're getting out of patient satisfaction, out of patient complaint systems. So there appears to be a kind of a disconnect in those results. So we have started looking for experience elsewhere in the world about the reasons for this. And is there a problem with the design of the protocol that we're using? So we're going to need to review that. We're going to need to review how clearly it reflects the priorities that the minister spoke about. Does that protocol on patient satisfaction actually reflect what we have committed to do as a top priority over the next 5 years? So that is going to have to be reviewed. The third thing is we've never had patients that, oh, nobody mentioned this, but perhaps I shouldn't, but I do think that that it's not going to just be hospitals, it needs to be expanded to primary health care as well. One of the reasons why we wouldn't do it at a wider spread is because one does need some kind of external validation of the survey. It really does need to be done by some kind of independent party. And because otherwise it's just management evaluating itself, and that is what drives up the cost.
So if you're going to contract research agencies to come and do your patient satisfaction surveys in order to ensure that they are perceived to be valid and not biased, then we need to look very carefully at how what kind of models can enable us to do that without paying huge research survey costs every time we want to do a patient satisfaction survey. So that is why we kept it fairly modest for why we look at those issues. However, the other question was how will hospitals be helped? And I wanted to link that to some of the questions around what strategies will you use to reduce, for instance, ambulance delays. There are a number of methodologies in use around the world, and we're working with several organizations and impact countries that are working on things like systems for reliable implementation of protocols. And I must confess that I had thought it was a peculiarly South African problem that people don't do as they're supposed to do. But of course it isn't. There's been major studies in the United States showing that the level of implementation of protocols is one of the biggest challenges. And there are methodologies that would accelerate that through actual implementation based on using locally available data by management teams. So data not for reporting, but for actual use on the ground. Based on process analysis, the question around delays in ambulance response times, often it's the same as waiting times. It's often that we don't organize things properly. I mean, the minister referred to that. We put in unnecessary steps in our processes that actually double our workload. So there are more efficient ways of using the resources that we have. And there are people in the country who already do have experience in implementing those kinds of approaches to improving efficiency and improving quality. How will we do it? Well, I mean, that's always a big question. We are trying to mobilize partners working in the field, donors working in the field, but not to set up a separate vertical system, but to make sure that it feeds into management systems. I think the example of the CNCCP program is using quality improvement networks. So we would use all possible opportunities to reinforce the kind of skills, because it really does need mentoring on the ground. It's not just sending out a list of instructions. It really does involve helping managers. The point about safety systems, people spoke about negligence, they spoke about avoidable deaths. There are systems for monitoring medical error. One of the challenges is that people often seem to feel that medical error needs to be punished. And international experience shows that, in fact, we need to learn from medical error, because often it is a system failure, it's not an individual failure. And that's a major turnaround in approach. I think that was the last point that I needed to make. Complaints, also similarly by applying the same kind of process analysis. What is the reason for all of the delays? And also by improving the investigation of complaints on the ground, so that we would actually have a team of clinicians who would be able to assist institutions in understanding why are they getting that level of complaint, what has gone wrong in those systems.
Thank you very much. You really brought a team that is very heavy, I must say. I think you brought new people. But that's a question on the ambulances. Our country is Asian Africa. There are rural areas where the roads are very bad. And in fact, in those rural areas, those who are taxi people don't use the normal taxis that we know. They use buggies. And most of those combis that you buy as Department of Health, mm-hmm. they get packed up time and again. And why don't we buy buggies instead of 4x4s, mm-hmm. instead of having those? But it's just a question. The other one that probably needs to go to provinces. Mm-hmm. How much litigation goes? How much money do we pay into mm-hmm. litigation because people have been mismanaged in hospitals? Mm-hmm. Probably not for today, but we need to know that. Mm-hmm. She could have said this side. We could have promoted her to be a member of parliament because she was sitting here. You could have said this side, Mandy. But you can continue. You can talk.
Firstly, the department has admitted several tests that
and they are endeavors to remediate. And I'm sure under the leadership of the minister, we'll be coming to this house to discuss some legislative amendments that will be required to get there. I would like to just highlight that medicines are registered on the basis of safety, efficacy, and quality, and that we established through a clinical trial. A clinical trial that has a fairly huge number, 50,000 or so, to establish that. That is the innovative medicine. Now, when it comes to generic medicine, you do a bio study that may have 12 to 15 people, and on the basis of comparing that data with the innovator data, then you get a measure of the efficacy and safety. Safety goes beyond that. It will go to looking at the chemistry of the actives and so on. Now, once we have a six-dose combination that does not have an innovator, it becomes a challenge. Because the submission will be looking at data from 12 people instead of a more massive one. That is where the challenge is at. But if it's a six-dose combination that has an innovator, it's not a problem, it's treated like any other generic. So the challenge with some of the FDCs that have been slow has been that data that has been sought by the FDC from the applicants that would make the power of the study a little sound. So that's where the challenge mostly is. But I want to assure the House that all the antiretrovirals that have been submitted to the FDC have gone through the first stage review, through the first committee review, and sometimes it's that data that is not forthcoming from the applicant, and then it takes a little bit of time to get to registration. But I am 100% sure that everything that has been submitted has gone through the first stage review. Now, registration of medicines is an iterative process where the applicant will submit something. We look at the data for efficacy, safety, and quality. There may be a few questions raised. And the applicant, if the applicant satisfactorily addresses the questions raised, the second round of committees will approve and it goes to MCC for a recommendation to register. If, however, during the second review, those questions are not satisfactorily addressed, then we go to another session of backwards and forwards responding to those questions. Thank you, Chair. I hope that can respond to Honorable Walter's question.
Thank you.
Unfortunately, we cannot speak about specifics unless we are directed by this House. That's what the law says. And we cannot speak about specifics to anybody unless we are directed by a court of law.
No, when we want specifics, we'll call you. There's a time where we'll need the specifics, but we'll call you. Maybe acting head of development, we need to know why can't we make sure so that MCC can work. We separate them from the department and make them a standalone. But that's for your consideration later. There's something that is going on. I'm not sure whether you have ever listened to Rita. I usually listen to Mhlobo and N. Especially at night. You can do it today. You'll find that after 8, there's somebody who's calling himself a doctor. He doesn't talk proper properly, but he'll be advertising some form of medicine. And it goes on and on and on, and you wonder whether these medicines have been tested by the MCC. I'm not sure whether you've heard that. Every day, on Mhlobo and N, some of them, they call them Makokota, I don't know, Makokota. Have you ever heard it? But there's a lot of medicines that are being pushed in. Okay, Mike.
Can you just on that particular issue, I mean, I've got a love parliamentary reply, but as you know, I like to ask some questions. And a reply today from the Minister of State and Security, where we, as a party, laid charges against, where's the gentleman's name? Zalban Gwala, who's from KZN. He does the Ubujani, Ubujani, concoction that he claims cures HIV/AIDS. Never been tested by the MCC. He refuses actually to give you the information on how it's made up. And the police have withdrawn the court case, despite the fact that he's in breach of the law. So, you know, we need to take a tougher stance on all these bogus concoctions that are out there and assist the MCC and the Department of Health in this regard.
maybe if you could help us and tell us those that have been tested. Because people actually use this thing. They feel that they are good. And you find one tablet, they say it can cure your sexual problems, it can cure your skin. The same tablet, it can cure everything. It's all in one. Okay.
Yes, this is the problem. The challenge here is that complementary medicines are not well regulated in this country yet. But the department is embarking on a serious one. The minister is actually directed that this be done very quickly out of this menu, because it will be Umhlobo and menu. It will be in the radio station, local radio station in Limpopo and KwaZulu-Natal and so on, all over the country. And these wonderful and wet things that to be cleaned. So we are quite advanced in developing regulations for regulating complementary medicines. And Chair, what you are suggesting is part of what I was kind of thinking that the minister is going to come back to the house on a little later.
Okay.
On how we strengthen the MCC, how we regulate complementary medicines and so on. A little more robustly than the capacity we have now. But currently, anybody can report to the ministry or to the MCC or anything that worries them, and we will investigate. Because most of the information that we investigate is from information we get from the ground, and then we can investigate. And within the current law, there is provision that we can call for anything to be submitted to MCC for evaluation, and that we normally do, though usually there will be many legal wrestles before we get to pinning the person down. And we are looking at strengthening legislation and regulations to enable us to get through those without too much pain and 2 years long litigation against the department or the MCC. The other issue that I need to mention is that where healers, I'll call them healers, where healers are preparing extemporaneous preparations, that is an invisa for one patient, the law allows it. But once you begin to sell on the last day, then we can make signature.
Okay, thanks very much. Okay, was this the last one? Yeah, okay, thanks. Members, that was the response to your question. I'm sure we still have time if you want a second round, and then we'll take 15 minutes. Okay, I see Mike's hand. Who else? Oh, okay, Memora. Yeah, the only two, eh? Okay. Okay, you can go on, Mike.
Chair, just on the issue of OSD and the provinces, I mentioned it to the minister, hasn't been answered, but the fact that most of the provinces, if not all, have overspent again this year. And I believe, KwaZulu-Natal in particular, is 3.5, maximized the 3.5 billion overdraft, and asked that to go over to the UK, to Barclays Bank, to get special permission to extend that overdraft. Okay? So, I mean, that's the extent, it's a huge problem. And one of the contributing factors is the OSD. The fact that it wasn't budgeted for properly initially, it was, the cost was underestimated. And what it's done is it's forced provinces each year to overspend, and that overspend has been transferred to the next year, so it eats into the next budget, and it's just a snowballing effect. And I was wondering if the department could give us some idea of what's been done to address it. When will it be addressed? Because I think this year the total amount may be up to 12 billion rand overspent. So, it's continuously eating into the next year's budget, and something has to be done sooner or later to stop it. Else we get a situation where the entire year's budget is taken up by just paying what they owe for the previous year. So if the department could just elaborate on that. And then on the substance abuse issue, I went to the Portfolio Committee on Social Development yesterday. They had Sanka there. And what has always concerned me, Chair, is that while I understand social development has a big role to play in prevention and awareness, we have a equal role to play as health in treatment, and we play no role whatsoever at all in the treatment of substance abuse as the health department. We leave everything up to social development, and I know that was the not deal, but that's how the department was divided when welfare and health were separated many years ago. And it's something we need to look at as a committee, that we play a more active role in substance abuse, calling in the Central Drug Authority and seeing, you know, how we can assist them. I think that's just a comment from my side. And then just lastly on the MCC, the Minister mentioned when he replied to Honourable Dudney's question in the House about 2-3 weeks ago on the N1H1 virus, and I mentioned the fact that the MCC hadn't then approved it, but you have subsequently. The fact that he said we should also look at mechanisms to speed up approval of drugs. If they've been approved by credible countries, and he mentioned the American, I think it's the FDA, whatever, the EU and the UK, he mentioned in particular, those three. If ARVs or any other drug has been approved by them, and given the seriousness of the situation in this country and the cost to the government, that we should fast-track them by using their clinical trials instead of repeating the whole process and causing massive delays. So I think it's something we need to look at, and hopefully that might be one of the recommendations coming from the Minister with the you know, the amendments to the law that you mentioned. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, theoretically, I think the last point that that he has made, my it's true, but we need to make sure that we check whether the Minister said it correctly that way. But theoretically, when you look at it, if it has been tested in human beings, there's no reason why we should delay it. But before you answer, I think get all the questions, jot them down and then... Mm-hmm. Memoir?
Okay. I have some questions that were answered. One page, on page 21, about the hospital management costs and primary healthcare management costs, to say what happens after the CEOs and managers of primary healthcare centers have been trained. I mean, I think it was last month where we met the department and they told us about 200 CEOs have gone through the hospital management program or the master's between the two. But we still have things not going according to the plans. I mean, what happens? Is it only training for CV in terms of applying for more jobs or what? And then the other one is on page 90, where we talk about disaster management. I think what is written is that we develop. My question was that, are we redeveloping new ones, or are we strengthening and evaluating what we had previously? Yeah, because here it says develop and implement disaster management policy. So, when I was still working at BARA, I did my department and it was signed, so I'm not sure if we're doing new ones or we're re-evaluating those ones and checking if they're still relevant based on the times now. Thanks.
I'm not sure, but you'll correct me if I'm wrong. I think when we're talking about 200 CEOs, they have not been trained. They will go for training. I think that's what the document was saying, but you'll correct me if that document was saying that they are going to be taken for training. And that was the question that was being asked. Why do you take somebody for training when you have already employed him? I think that was the question that was coming. But they'll correct me. But at the same time, I think I can go and do a medical degree. We can both of us go and do a medical degree. But the way we work, it's not going to be the same. But the important thing is that the one who's going to employ us would have some comfortability in knowing that we have got the certificate. But when we are there at work, you'll find that I'm more busier than her. Though we're both doctors, and people like me more than her, or they like her more than, because we are doing differently, despite the fact that they've got the certificate. But in any case, that's a very subjective thing. Okay. Yeah, the last one.
Yeah. I just wanted to pose a question on the intersectoral relation. For instance, Dr. Pillay, when you're presenting, for instance, you mentioned diarrhea. You know, lots of other sectors need to come in there. We can talk of that with other violence and other things, injury, violence, something. So I'm just wondering, are you getting intersectoral cooperation as one government working? That's one question. The other one, I think we're doing it. The other one is, the other one is alcohol. I think that I'm correct if I say the alcohol people produce drinks targeted to youth. You know, they in the past when I was a youth myself, the national, I think it was National Party government, they produced Shandy, which was a soft drink, a doctor with a beer. And the government of the day simply stopped it. Now, I've seen around there that there's a lot of these, you know, drinks. Some of them are this, and they put vodka, and then there's a lot of the... Yeah, I'm not sure what the health department, but I'm sure the health department could really tackle that one. Now, you mentioned, Chair, that we've been invited as a committee, you know, by alcohol people. Now, I know that even when I was in the portfolio committee of health before, there was such an invitation. But I am not sure exactly how the community uses the opportunity presented by an invitation like that. Has it got any effect at all on them, whatever we say? Or are they wanting to come out and say, no, we interact with the, you know, with the health people? Yeah, it's just a comment that perhaps we would need to make sure as we take a decision. And on there was another question.
Okay, thank you. Maybe let me explain why the invitation. I think there's a research work that was done around Cape Town. I'll probably... There's a research work that was done around Cape Town about alcohol and injuries. And I think that report was very bad as far as the alcohol industry. Mm-hmm. Now, what they are being proactive, they're saying those who are elected members, we want to come and talk to you. Not that we don't acknowledge that alcohol is causing problems, but we want to show you how we want to be part of the solution into the problems that are happening. So or at least for that, those are the people that you need to listen to, because they are coming with solutions. They know there's a problem, and they accept the problem. But they say, we want to be part of the solution in making sure that we better the lives of the people, despite the fact that we are getting some... whatever, from selling alcohol. What I was trying to say, memory, is you are saying that some of these people have been trained, yet they're still bad in hospital. Now, that's why I'm bringing this point, that we can be trained together as doctors to do a particular work. But when we get to the field, we'll be having certificates, but the way we work will be different. You might find that I'm trained as a doctor, but I've become a useless doctor, as compared to the other doctor who's not a useless doctor, though we both have a certificate. The importance about the certificate is that the authority that is employing me is going to feel happy that at least this person has got qualifications. But qualifications sometimes mean nothing. You can find somebody who has got no certificate, but is better than the one who's got a certificate. But I'm not saying that should be their answer.
I was referring to the hospital management, not the medical training.
Okay.
Yes, to say, what are we doing? I mean, these 200 are not the first ones, definitely.
Okay.
I did mine in 2005, and I was with a lot of CEOs. So.
Okay, so you can answer.
I remember you are asking the question.
Okay, maybe you will understand why we were asking the geriatric help from the department. Now,
yeah.
Maltule has remembered now what she wanted to say. Can you say it in 1 second?
Yeah.
Say it in 1 second, Maltule. Say it in 1 second.
You know, the drugs are a problem. They are expensive. Now, I'm just asking the question from the department. Why can't government produce generic drugs? You know, why can't we just take that step of saying we're going to produce our own generic drugs? Maybe the initial capital required, you know, to set it up might be sort of frightening people. But I'm sure that in the end, really, would make a lot of babies. India,
let's try to do that. Thanks, Malcolm. If we can just be short, because the bus is leaving at 6 o'clock.
Thank you, I'll be very brief. On the OSD and the deficit generally, the Accountant General has been helping us to drill down facility by facility to look at where the over expenditure is, not just at the provincial level, but sub-provincial level. And we've done 4 provinces today to look at that. In addition, the Technical Committee, which is the HODs of the provinces together with ourselves, have been looking at what measures we need to put in place to improve efficiency, do cost containment, etc. We are in the process of finalizing a document that we're going to be presenting to the NHC, chaired by the Minister. So there's a whole range of processes together with Treasury that's going to be drilling down. But it's clear that we might need a bailout of some significant proportions in some provinces going forward. But we first need to understand exactly what the problem is. The OSD is contributory, but it's not the whole reason for the overexpenditure. On terms of substance abuse, I think many things have been said. We've noted this change. And speeding up regulations, the minister currently has the power in terms of the Medicines and Controlled Substances Act to do that. But he's reluctant to kind of do that because of the independence of the MCC. But clearly, we are starting to look at how the MCC can be more efficient. And I think the registrar has said a little bit about that. In terms of hospital management costs, Oliver Morey, one of the key problems is people get trained and put them back in the old system with no more delegations than they had previously. So you have the skill, but you don't have the authority then to act. That's part of the problem. The other is lack of support from top management in some cases. So you know that, having worked in the hospital. On the disaster management, this is
have you already trained them more?
According to our strategic plan, we've trained 140. Of the 400, already. So large numbers here have been claimed. So there's a legitimate question about why. Some of them, despite not having delegations, can do well. Again, I think it relates to what the chair has been saying. You know, depends on individuals as much as the training you have. On the disaster management, Honorable Mori, this is provincial-wide disaster management plan, not facility-based. And at the moment, provinces don't have province-wise disaster management plan in the health sector. We have one led by the former Department of Local Government, who are the custodians of disaster management in the country as a whole. But the health sector itself doesn't have province-specific disaster management plan. So the intention is over the next 3 years to ensure that every province has one that's consolidated from the health sector side, that contributes then to the Department of Cooperative Government and Local and Traditional Affairs overall plan for the country. In terms of intersectoral collaboration, Honorable Lutuli, it's a challenge. We're saying it needs to be done at all levels. And again, it depends on people wanting to collaborate for the greater good. The problem is that we are all siloized. All of us have a particular budget, particular responsibility. So I think to the extent that our PMAs can reflect intersectoral collaboration, to the extent you will see it happening more and more. Where you hold people accountable and incentivize them, in a sense, to talk to other people. And the final point about government and generics, there's a task team currently between DTI, National Treasury, and ourselves, looking, for example, at the local production of API, active pharmaceutical ingredients, for ARVs in particular, given the large cost. So I think government is moving in that direction. But there are many hurdles. You know, they're kind of... one of the big problems in producing APIs is the toxins that you produce in producing the APIs. So you need to have very good management of waste products. Otherwise, you can just pollute, you know, the country by producing them locally. The second is technology transfer. We don't have the kind of technology at the moment to generate large quantities of API. So we'll have to import the technology. So there are a number of things, but there's a task team looking at it. Thanks.
On that last part that you're talking, I think it's an association of pharmacy industry manufacturers. They are worried that you seem to be saying that the people that they are going to target are local, which is okay, it's good. But even those that are saying they are local, they still import a lot of things from outside. When you are actually neglecting those that are supposed to bring them from outside, and it doesn't make economic sense to say that we are producing locally, yet you are importing all these things. But it's something that you've got to look at. Because they came to me complaining about those things, but I'm still going to hear them more. Members, if there are no other questions, can we call it a day? Thank you very much, members. But there's just one last point that we said we're going to discuss. I think we all accept that we're going to pass the budget. Unfortunately, he has left, he's going to take it, but we'll talk about it. We wanted to discuss, when are we adopting the report? We need to do it sometime next week. This is what I want us to discuss. Even in the presence of the department, it doesn't matter. Do we do it on Wednesday? Do we come back from wherever we're going to be? From our constituencies, we come back on Wednesday, we adopt it and we go back, or do we do it on Thursday? And I know some of the people have finished their tickets. They don't have their tickets. How long does it take to adopt the report? You have been here. If some of us were new here, we don't know. You should know how long it takes.
Well, I
don't know. Okay. I don't know. How long does it take?
I think
it depends how long the report is.
It depends on the
meeting. No, they're still going to prepare it. Because we had a meeting today, they're going to prepare it. No, when we come back, we're going to come back on the 13th, and on the 13th we're debating the budget. So can we agree that we'll meet on Wednesday?
What is the date?
The date Wednesday, next week, what is the date next week? 30th. No, the 30th is the Good Friday. Okay, so can we agree? The problem is that if we don't have enough members on that day, we'll end up postponing it again. So we need to be all here so that we have the quorum. We need a quorum on that day.
Yeah.
So let's agree that we come back on Wednesday. What time on Wednesday? What time on Wednesday?
10.
Let's say 10. 10 on Wednesday. Okay. We agree that on 10 on Wednesday, on the 30th, we'll be here. Department, thank you very much. I think you came well prepared this time. And you have done very, maybe it's because there was a minister. But we're seeing new faces who are very good. But know with that, at least we're happy with some of your responses.
They were intimidated by confidence.
Well, they were intimidated by confidence. That's what is being said. Members, thank you. Oh, sorry, Mama Lutut. Okay, there's Zuma Dube, and then you.
Yeah, about requesting the Auditor General to come before the committee. The strategic plan from the department.
Okay, Mike.
I don't know what something
about
that is. Maybe
the
Auditor
General
can
come Wednesday.
Okay, I'm going to answer you just now.
Matube. Chairperson, Mina, I have this arrangement. I was coming on Wednesday, but at 3 o'clock with my credit service. So if I don't get a flight for either Tuesday or, I mean Wednesday morning, then I won't be able to come because most of the flights are fully booked. I struggle to get this one. But if I do get it, I'll be present. But if I don't, I can't.
Okay, can I say, on your point, can I say on Sunday evening, I'm going to phone each and every member to find out whether they've managed to book for Sunday, I mean for Wednesday. So that if there's going to be hitches, then we can phone each other and postpone or decide what we do about that day. But I'll phone you on Sunday, all of you. Mike, on your letter, I've received your letter, Mike. We have said that I think members must know that each and every member, you must feel free to suggest to the committee that can we invite so-and-so to, can we call whatever that you want to be called. It's a right of all the members. But I think what we need, as a committee, we need to revive that management committee so that we can look at these things. All I did this time was to sit with the whip and see what is going to be happening on Friday. And when you contacted most of the members, specifically the ANC members, they are not going to be around on Friday. So that made it, and in fact, all of them are complaining that there's it's a short notice and it's going to be very difficult for them. We didn't even contact the department, but I've got a letter that is coming to you explaining that, Mike. Yeah, otherwise, I thought it was a good point, but unfortunately, most of the members said they're not going to be able to come for Friday. So I'll give you a letter, Mike. I'll give you a letter. Okay. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you.